Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. And just to save time for curious listeners, Cat vs. Terry, Kai and Ty vs. the Oddities, and Virgil vs. Nails will not be mentioned on today's show. I call these matches bad, but in 95, Dean Douglas taught me not to use the word bad because that means good.
I'm Carl Jones, and did you know that I've been involved in SummerSlam in three consecutive years? In 1989, I constructed the sign that nearly fell on Gene Okerlund's head. In 1990, I was the getaway driver in the limo for Ted DiBiase and Sapphire. And in 1991, I was in the prison cell next door to the Mountie. I heard everything.
I'm G. John Chase, and we managed to answer a lot of questions last week, but one person wrote in, if Hulk Hogan says the N-word in the middle of a forest, do people still get offended? No, seriously, he's writing in to ask, he just can't get any privacy these days.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke. Since last week, my @WrestlingProfit Twitter account is kicking off big style. In the last 2 days alone, I've had two tweets favourited by the Kurt Angle, but somehow I'm still less followed than Mike Sempervivi. Get on Twitter and write this wrong, you know it's right.
This is the panel for the 51st Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us rank the best SummerSlam matches of all time next.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 51st Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Carl Jones.
Thank you for inviting me along to the Summerfest.
G. John Chase.
Yep.
And Kieran O'Rourke.
He's in out.
And we are back today to rank the best matches in SummerSlam history, a podcast I'm very much looking forward to. This won't be our first time foraying into the world of rankings, always a controversial topic. We did the Ranking the WrestleMania series back in March, which you can go back and listen to for first-time listeners at squaredcirclegazette.com or by subscribing to us on iTunes at Squared Circle Gazette Radio. A bit of a difference, though, in the way that that was framed to this. The previous time we've done something like this with the Ranking the WrestleMania series, we had one list, which is my own personal ranking. This time, and this is for the benefit of the people listening to, for the basis of this show, which is going to see a lot of debate, I feel, we had individual rankings around the table for the SummerSlam matches. The list that you have seen on the forums for the last few days and the list we're going to talk about today is the cumulative ranking, the mean average ranking for every match that was listed. So much to discuss, so many matches to talk about. We also have your thoughts and your comments on the list and your thoughts on notable omissions from that list that we're going to get to at intermittent points throughout the show. So we've got so much to discuss. We'll kick to it right away with the number 20 match on this list, Christian versus Randy Orton from SummerSlam 2011. Interesting this got in the top 20 matches around this table. It's a bit of a surprise, I think. G, I'm going to let you lead here because of all the people around this glorious oaken table, you were the one to rate this highest at number 16, which bumped it up to number 20. So I'll let you go here.
The funny thing is, when we was looking at all the matches, and I was writing down the matches that I thought were the best to be put in this the system, I looked, once you got past 2002, it really does like fall off a cliff. In my initial list that I had 30 between 88 and 2002, and then I struggled to come up with many more after 2002. So, you know, we've got some obvious ones that will be later on in the list. And then suddenly, I was just trying to think of programs that passed through SummerSlam, and it suddenly just dawned on me Christian versus Randy Orton, because that feud in its entirety is one of the highlights for me in recent years, as in just a really well-executed feud with great matches all the way through. Do I think it's the best match in the series they had? No, I don't think it was. I think the first one on SmackDown or the first pay-per-view one...
Yeah, the over-the-limit match, I think, is
was
the
good.
Best.
But I think this was a really good match in itself. I thought like they managed to take it up to an extra level. I thought the finish was really good, while slightly slightly over the top with him diving, basically
contrived.
Yeah, contrived, a little contrived. It was a nice spot to watch, but like if you think about it more than 5 seconds, it becomes contrived. Plenty of other ones that were mentioned, like Punk and Hardy. I think that I'm sure there's better matches than that. And just Christian and Randy on pop to me. Those two during that series never had a bad match. And when I watched it again, I thought that was a really good match.
I want to get thoughts opposite on the other side of the table here, because again, I did not rank this personally in my top 20 matches. When we get to the notable omissions later on, there are a few of those matches that I think could take this place at number 20 or higher. So thoughts across the table, Kieran, Carl, again, this is a no holds barred match. Again, not taken away from it, it is great action, but this high on the all-time list?
It's an enjoyable match. I watched it back recently. There were a few when you sent the sort of the list for us to rank, Liam, that I had to go back and watch again as a bit of a refresher, and this was one of them. It's an enjoyable match. I can't argue too much with the ranking because I had it in a in a similar area, but there are a few that I struggle to place as I'm going through the list, and this was one of them. 18 I had it at for my list. I had it in the same ballpark, but it was one of those that on another day could be two or three places lower, might not crack the top 20. It was one I did struggle with a little bit.
No, like Chase, I mean, this series of matches was fantastic. Both guys were just... When it comes to a SummerSlam or a WrestleMania match, though, nostalgia plays a massive part, and I think just the fact that it was only one in a series, I think that, although it's standalone, it probably, we shouldn't rank it that way. Just, I think, when you're talking of the legacy of a match, I think it does hurt it a little bit. So it's one of them that it doesn't stand in the memory as really outstanding. But, you know, it's great action, great series, so... good stuff, but I would struggle to be in the top 20 for me.
Okay, fair enough. Loopy Date from TPWW Forums adds, arguably Christian's only truly great singles feud. It's a crying shame because there was a time when he was the most entertaining wrestler in the world, but for one glorious summer we got what we all wanted, which is Christian almost main eventer. Kind of the culmination of Christian as a heel, because he'd done the slow burn turn over the summer, including Money in the Bank, where he won the belt on a disqualification, which leads to the no-holds-barred match here, which Orton wins. Strong candidate, very good match. We move now to number 19, Shane McMahon versus Tess, Lover or Leaver from 1999. Again, another no holds barred match here. Very interested to see what people think around the table of this one. Again, gee, you rated this one very high. It pretty much sat around this designated area. I know, Kieran and Carl, you didn't rate this in your top 20. I put it in at number 19 myself. Gee, you put this one a little bit higher. It seems natural here to leave with yourself, Shane and Test.
I think it's a really entertaining match. I mean, if some people don't agree with it and had it down lower, I can fully understand that. But I think there's a lot of elements which is fun. I mean, for me, Shane McMahon, this is the only Test match I'm ever going to praise. Shane McMahon's a bit of a kind of a guilty pleasure, I guess, from my perspective of I enjoy watching his matches. And also the absurd greatness of the Mean Street Posse at ringside.
Yeah, the Posse at ringside on the sofa in the front row is glorious.
On their sofa with their different limbs, like in braces or whatever.
And Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah, Hawaiian shirts. They're drinking a bottle of bubbly without glasses.
Yeah.
They're just drinking it from the bottle because that's how classy they are. And it's just awesome. There's such ridiculousness, like... Shane hitting Tess over the head with a picture frame with the picture of Shane and the Mean Street Posse on it.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's
Patterson
just,
and Briscoe's running.
Yeah, get a babyface pop for running for Briscoe and Patterson. It's a silly match, but it's a fun one.
Yeah, it's very good here. It's a match that's based on a lot of kind of easy smoke and mirrors that were kind of emblematic of the time in many ways, but this does it better than most, and I did enjoy this match a lot. I've watched this match an awful lot. I can see some people's objections to this in the sense of Shane McMahon non-wrestler going such a long time with Test, but again, because you had so many built-in shortcuts with the weapons and the posse, and again, you had Shane taking a lot of crazy bumps, the elbow drop obviously through the table is what everybody remembers. Other side of the table, thoughts on this one? Does this fit in that same category as Christian Orton for both of you?
I don't think we're going to come across any like bad matches on this list.
So. No, of course. If it got to this point, then
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, exactly. The hardcore stuff, I've kind of, just watching back, didn't bear so well over time for me personally. Maybe it's just watching in the context of all the other great matches. I mean, it's super fun. I mean, it is a lot of smoke and mirrors. I always enjoyed it, but just for me, I think there's a lot of better matches out there. That's as simple as that, really.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree too much. I will say again, the strength of this, though, is I was convinced after this match that Test was going to be a big deal in the WWF, because yeah. I thought this was really good.
It's a fun match. The Posse are fantastic at rings. The Posse make the match. If they're not there, I certainly don't think it makes a top 20.
That's probably a line you're never going to hear again. The Posse make the match.
Shocker. And a little hat tip to Patterson and Briscoe for their running. Pat Patterson threw a better punch then than most of the roster can today.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. Maybe sort of echoing somewhat Kieran's point. I'd watched the match a lot when I was younger, really enjoyed it. And if you'd asked me this sort of 5 or 6 years ago, it probably would have made my top 20. But a bit of the old case of romanticism about it. When I watched it back, it didn't quite hold up as well as I thought I remembered it.
I think maybe like just the shock of how good it was, given that it was like, you know, Shane O and stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe just over time that's kind of worn off a little bit.
I can, again, like say the first one, I was trying to think outside the box, something that's like I enjoyed watching. And
I don't think it's an invalid pick by any means. And Booker Mania from the UK Fan Forum says, I'm glad you've added Test and Shane to this. I consider it one of the underrated matches of the Attitude Era, so by no means are you alone in this. We're going to move along to number 18 on our cumulative list, the Steiner Brothers versus the Heavenly Bar
Charlie's from SummerSlam 93. Loopy Date from TPWW says, maybe my favourite tag team match ever. I love, love, love this match. So happy to see it on the list.
Yeah.
Okay, I wore the tape of SummerSlam 93 out as a kid, and the Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey pretty much blew my mind when I was a youngster.
Can we just clarify? You wore a tape out watching Jimmy Del Rey.
You're damn right.
Okay. Did he give you trench foot?
He didn't give me trench foot. It was a great callback.
Still the best line ever on this podcast.
Yeah, oh God. Go back to the all-time favourite tag team show for that one.
Yeah.
Steiner's Bodies, this pretty much hovered around this area. I rated it as exactly number 18. Kuhn had a little bit lower than 20, Carl a little bit more above. Again, G, you were the deciding vote here and making sure this got on the list by ranking this fairly highly. I do love this match. I think Del Rey puts in a great performance. The crowd heats there. It's in Michigan. Really good stuff. Just in the mold of the classic Cornette tag matches of old. You know, it doesn't quite hold up to the standards of the Midnights and the Southern Boys and matches of that nature, but this is really damn good.
It's just that little kind of hidden gem. This one I just thought was a really entertaining match. I mean, I really like the Steiners. I mean, they just... Well, they may look like licorice all sorts when they come to the ring. It's just they wrestle like badasses, and that's what I just always loved about them as a tag team. The Heavenly Bodies are just amazing. They're just awesome. It's just like Jimmy Del Rey, when we were just watching him. It's just that thing where you just keep kind of rewinding the tape and just watching it back. Cause it's just so hilarious, and to partner him up with Jim Cornette is just like... It's just absolutely fantastic. And I think there's better tag team matches that we will get to later on, but I just think this was a really solid match. Some great double team moves, athleticism, and so on and so forth. And just a really entertaining match.
Yeah, at a point when where high flying wasn't quite as commonplace as it is today, Jimmy Del Rey busting out the moonsault and the dive off the apron and stuff like that, that kind of blew me away as a kid.
I think something that helps make this match sort of stick in your mind more is that it's coming at a time in 93 where... we're not really at a golden age for tag team wrestling at that point, particularly within the confines of the WWF. So I think that helps it stick out. The crowd are a key factor as well. I think with like you say, Liam, with it being in Michigan, it really helps with the heat. Not to say that it's not a good match without that by any means, but it gives it that sort of that little bit of extra flavour, if you like. I like the fact that there's the tease with a bit of false heat for the heels at one point as well, which does hark back a bit more to the Southern Boys and the Midnights. A really fun match in front of a hot crowd, and I think I had it ranked in a fairly similar position, so again I'm quite happy with where it is on the list.
It's at the time, as you say, tag teams, there was a dearth within the division, and so I was really big into the Steiners. So I wanted them pushed to the moon, and I was gutted they didn't really get to where they deserved to be, really, for a prolonged period of time. Fucking Quebecers. just Scotty doing the Frankensteiner was just, I've always marked out for that. And Gigolo just needs to be in a hip jiggling contest with Rick Rude at some point in heaven or whatever. just super fun, and just better tag matches on the list for me, but just always loved the match. Just a really fun match.
But just one point on the match. I really like this spot where I can't quite remember how they get into it, but like there's just the moment Jimmy Del Rey has Steiner by the feet.
Okay, so basically what happens is Scott Steiner's in the reins, basically bumping more at the beginning, and you got Del Rey and Pritchard coming in, taking atomic drops one after another. He shoots Gigolo into the ropes. Gigolo slides through his legs but holds his feet while Pritchard comes from behind with a bulldog.
Yeah.
A spot that Carl, me and you stole.
In
years gone by.
I just really like that spot. I've never seen that spot before. And I just thought, that's a really clever spot. I really like that. It's just like, they're outthinking the Steiners.
Yeah, it was just cool because I'd never had any exposure to the Bodies before, and it was this new team on the scene. Yeah. And again, I can't just stress enough, Del Rey just completely took me by surprise. Oh, at first glance, you just think, what is this guy?
His handlebar moustache.
Oh, brilliant. It's brilliant. The gap tooth, everything about him. And by the way, Scott Steiner, the Steiner brothers' sister, has a tan that Hulk Hogan would say, too much, brother.
Yeah.
Rough.
Oh, Lord.
We move up now because there's a noticeable jump in quality, I think, between the three we've just discussed, which I think while we appreciate them, I think on a different day we could probably pick a different match. Here we got a tie for 16th place in the cumulative voting. We go first with 16A, which is the Ultimate Warrior versus Rick Rude from 1989. A match that I'm very glad came on the list at all, because I thought this was going to be a bit of a forgotten gem as well. But I think this is a really good match. One of the better big match shows of the 80s, I think, from a WWF perspective at least. Rude... Rude, this is one of, yeah, I heard it said before that this is Rude and Warrior's first great match, both of them, because Rude hadn't had a litany of great matches previously, and Warrior, of course, hadn't. Warrior got it done in this match. I thought this was a really good match. So much drama, the heat's through the roof, the near falls are great. What can I say? I think this is a really good match. Underrated.
I do love this match. It's just, yeah, and it's strange because I saw this one second, because remember I saw the SummerSlam 90 match first. So I saw the cage match and then saw this one, and I've already talked before about how much I love Rude. He's just absolutely fantastic, and yeah, this is like one of the few matches outside of Macho Man Randy Savage that I'd watch that has Ultimate Warrior in it. It's just Bobby Heenan at ringside's fantastic, Roddy Piper interference at the end, which is really entertaining. Jess Ventura is by far for me my favourite commentator of all time. I do like Heenan as much as the next guy, but Jess just for me was just fantastic, and he really makes this match for me. Bobby Heenan will be like they would call him a weasel when it comes to like trying to be in the favour of the heels and against the babyfaces. Ventura was just always right. Whatever he said that the heel should do or what the babyface would do, he was always right. And I loved it when, like, if the babyface commentator made a mistake, he instantly jumped on him. We ironically, this was the match we were just watching before we started the podcast, and there's that great moment where Shivani, who just randomly is just on this show out of nowhere from WCW, makes a comment at ringside as to something Warrior does. I can't remember.
Hits him with the belt,
and just Shivani just shrugs it off, going, "It's fine." It was outside the ring. Ventura just jumps on him and just says, "What the hell's wrong with you? No, that's still an attack outside the ring. What, you're telling me if somebody pulls out a gun and shoots them outside the ring, it's legal because it's outside the ring?" Yeah. And that's why I love Ventura. And he's probably the sole reason why, when I was young, I always liked the heels, like Macho Man and Rude, because I'd always go, "He's got a fucking point, actually."
Well, what was up with that, with the belt shot? It was just like Warrior just grabbed the belt and just did it.
I think Warrior just probably just on the spur of the moment, like, "What the fuck?
Yeah,
let's just do it."
It made no fucking sense, but yeah.
Shivani tries to hide it, and Ventura just jumps down his throat, and it's
well,
brilliant.
It wouldn't be the stupidest thing that Schiavone would go on to say.
No, but yeah, again, just to get on track into the match overall, again, the drama is just through the roof in this match.
Yeah, I think the commentary and the heat really helps this match, because they work a pretty methodical pace, really.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's all, obviously it's Warrior, so it's all in the confines of Warrior can do. The drama obviously reflected in the heat, and the commentary just makes it a really, really fun match.
Shishin KOTF from TPWW on this one says, "Warrior versus Rude was equally excellent to Bret and perfect. Deserves to be much higher on the list. Also, when you say my name in the podcast, can you please say it in received pronunciation or Scouse? Thanks."
Shishin KOTF! I don't care, like...
Moving swiftly along to, easily, at this point, the most controversial pick on the list. 16B, Daniel Bryan, John Cena, SummerSlam 2013. I'm going to get to the feedback first before we respond in kind. DMJ from Pro Wrestling Only says, "Bryan Cena at 16? Man, I think that's one of the top 5 matches of the past 15 years, maybe longer. Great build, great back and forth match, emotional ending. I can understand people hating the swerve at the end, but I'll readily admit I hate the post-match because I got worked. The intention was for me to say, fuck you, Triple H, you stole the spotlight again. You put yourself over the most over guy in the company. I hate you." And that's exactly what I did. WrestleMania from Pro Wrestling Only says, "I'm in agreement with those saying this is top 5 easily. Undefeated Steak from the UK Fan Forum says, this was 2 years ago already. It would be higher up in my eyes too. It was definitely a better match than Angle Austin, for instance. Angle Fan from F4W says, the 2013 matches are being ridiculously underrated. The older matches are getting bumps due to nostalgia. Hart vs. Perfect is nowhere near as good a match as Cena vs. Bryan. That's just crazy." Jizz Lobber from the UK Fan Forum says, "Forget SummerSlam, I'd struggle to name 15 matches in company history that I think are better than Cena vs. Bryan. That's the only thing that stands out on the list as being way off." Elliot from Pro Wrestling Only tops even that. "I think I would struggle to name 5 matches from the history of the WWE that I like better than Cena vs. Bryan." A lot of criticism on this one. I rated this match the highest of anybody. I had this in my top 10. I'm curious to see what everybody else thinks about this match around the table, though, because this did score lower from you guys. So let's hear what you have to say.
I'll say this, but when it comes to this one, and I spoke to you about it whilst I was actually doing my rankings, Liam, it was another one I really struggled with, because whilst I do enjoy the match, I can't look past the ending. I just cannot get past it. And whilst
a lot of nodding around the table,
whilst I nod, I forget the emailer's name, and I apologise for that. Whilst he sort of accepts it as part of the being worked element of it. I don't want to... I'm trying not to come across as sort of smart-ass, wise old sage type of thing here, but I went into the match expecting this to happen. I was expecting a screw.
I think we all did. I mean, we watched this match in a group together, and as good as this match was, and we were enjoying it when it was going on, I remember we were freely, openly talking about this almost feels like it's for naught because we know what's coming.
Yeah,
and it did happen.
And it sort of set in more with me the longer the celebration's going, you're thinking, they're not cutting away, they're not ending the show. So, you know, it's like, you know, the sword of Damocles is hanging above you, and you're just waiting for it to drop. And so in that respect, I think that's why it suffered in the rankings from my perspective.
The match itself is a great match. As you know, John Cena brings it on the big day when he needs to, when he needs to put someone over. The performance is great. Daniel Bryan, obviously, the two worked together well. They told a great story and a great reaction. The match is great, and it was. I remember being like really pleased at the time, like as to how it came across. But in a similar vein as to how I can't push WrestleMania 17 as being like the be all and end all because of the ending for me. This is the exact same reason. I agree with Carl. The ending's too bad for me because when Orton comes out and does the cash in, it just nullifies everything that we've just watched. And that's what it felt like. Watch that match again, and watch how many people cheer when Randy Orton comes out to cash in. Watch how many people cheer when Triple H turns. If you were one of those people that cheered, fuck you. If you were one of those people that did the yes chant, and they were there, fucking watch the tape again, fuck you, right? Because you ruined what was a perfectly great moment. If they wanted to do that angle, they could have done that angle on the following night on Raw. When he was doing a celebration saying, I finally did it, folks. Orton could come out and they could screw him then. They didn't need to do it in that story. The story was not Orton winning the belt. The story was Bryan finally winning the big one. And that's what ruined it. It ruined a great match. And there's another match later on which we'll talk about where the finish wasn't ideal considering to the quality of the match. And it's exactly the same. I'm sorry. It does. Something like that does affect the ratings of a match. It's just like, because the investment was for nothing.
Completely agree. I considered that when I docked it points based on what you just said. Like I said, I still had it top 10. The work in the ring I think is fantastic, but the thing ultimately when I'm trying to kind of weigh these matches up in my head when I was ranking it, and again I want to kind of get everybody's thoughts on this, I'm a big fan. Hey, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who when they do this in their own heads go bell to bell, what's a great match, what works, what's on fire. But in the same manner that if we were doing this for WrestleMania matches, you would include the post-match for Warrior and Savage as the why it works so well, because it's part of the complete story they're telling. Like you said, G, by design, the idea was to fuck you out of the feeling of, God damn, we got what we wanted out of this match. And that's fine if it wasn't for the fact the buy rate's fucking tanked and it didn't work. A match like this, the way that we kind of rate it, rank it when it comes to a main event world title change and making of a new guy is what everybody kind of was hoping for out of this situation. There's a bar there that you're trying to reach, and emotionally we're along for the ride, but when your whole idea is to pull the rug out, and we kind of knew it going in, we kind of knew it while it was going on, does dock it points for me. And I want to get to one point here from MJH before I throw this over to you guys from Pro Wrestling Only. There's a lot of good work in Bryan Cena, but I don't think it's laid out particularly well. They hit most of the necessary notes, such as Cena's power and Bryan's never say die attitude, but the underdog comes from the announcers, not the work in the ring, which is too back and forth for me. It doesn't come together as a whole, and there are some missteps. In some ways, it's as if they were afraid to lay out a Cena match where the other guy is the one to root for. Cena hits the AA way too early in the stretch, so while there's a pop for the kickout, it's not a heart stopper like the one towards the end of WrestleMania in the three-way. And the stretch doesn't go overboard as Cena might work it now, a la with Kevin Owens. Interesting, because again, even just grading it as a match, individually speaking, I don't think this is better than Punk and Brock on the same show. Throw it over to you guys now on the other side of the table for your thoughts on this, because I am very keen, especially from you, Kieran, on how you graded this and why.
I think you kind of touched on the points, but we've mentioned before about when you build a guy up for a real defining moment, especially with a first big title win, or a significant win anyway, sometimes you've just got to pull the full trigger on it. And if you don't, sometimes there's no, and I'm not saying there's no coming back from this one, but there's a definite peak moment. And I think, yeah, emotional memory may be playing a bit for me, because obviously, say, we're here together, and so we were discussing what we expected, and then when it does. So emotionally at the time, that was kind of held it back for me. The way the finish went down, it kind of it just took a special element out of the match, what could have been a real special occasion.
You're going for a certain feeling the whole match, you're relying on it with the idea that you're going to fuck us out of it. I do love the work in the ring, but I don't think the work in the ring overruns the booking philosophy here enough for me personally.
And to Kieran's point there, one of our fellow dignitaries, if you will, Luke Edwards, has said on a previous podcast how he wasn't that invested in the Bryan moment at Mania, as it were, because of what happened at SummerSlam, because that should have been the moment, regardless of whether or not it falls perfectly on the calendar how you would like for the crowning of a new champion or a perceived top guy, which, you know, despite what we think and what the company think, that's obviously two different things where Bryan's concerned. But another example here with regards to SummerSlam would have been Luger.
Yes,
you know, mm-hmm. With Luger you have to pull the trigger there, but because in Luger's case it wasn't necessarily convenient and they wanted it to be at Mania, they did themselves out of that moment,
and that's the reason why that match is not in the top 20.
The finish, or sorry, the post-match angle, it is enough to knock this down a few pegs or two, because once we start getting into top 10 area, we are going to be looking at matches that have great stories from begin to end, and that's it. There's no fault to them, or very minimal fault.
The story played out on its own natural terms anyway. I think it did work out okay for Bryan. He did get his big moment. It was on a bigger stage, and it did get over. It did work. But having said that, again, it does pull a little bit away from this, I think. If it wasn't for that post-match, where would you rank this?
Top 10.
I'm not a list guy, and I rank almost every match on a... I don't have a solid, consistent scale. Emotional memory of this match plays a big part of it. So if I had a different emotional memory, I don't know. Because
gotcha.
I feel it, so I can't answer that question.
I'd honestly find it difficult to put an exact number on where I would rank it, but it would certainly be higher and would probably crack the top 10.
Getting now to a couple of notable omissions. Sweet Chin Music 99 from Wrestling Forms is The Undertaker versus Bret Hart with Michaels as the ref from SummerSlam 97. The match is very solid and the entertainment and storyline value is off the charts in this match. So much groundwork is laid for these three men going forward after the events of this match playing out. Otto Demvons from the UK Fan Forum says, "Sorry guys, but it's absolutely criminal that Taker and Bret from 97 is not on this list. It's possibly my favourite Bret Hart match ever, and signifies everything good about WWE. Characters, action, unpredictability, and genuine interest about the end result. It's the climax of the nuclear Canada versus US feud in the middle of one of the best years in company history, and ties in all the major players in the story for both men. The Hart Foundation's group celebration at the end is an iconic moment. The emptying arena with rubbish being thrown in by the rabid US crowd, Bret holding up five fingers tying Hogan's title record, is a beautiful image encapsulating an electrifying time for the company that was getting hotter and hotter. After 20 odd minutes of a great slow burn action from two top workers, they arrive at the end sequence, which is one of the most dramatic ever, and is so often when wrestling is done right, it felt real. I could so believe that Bret would go so far as to spit on Shawn for trying to prevent him fulfilling his destiny, Shawn retaliating and ending up screwing things up for himself enough that he reluctantly countered the pinfall with his own career at stake. I don't think the quality or importance of this one should be understated, and I really think you've missed the trick by not including it, not least because Test is on there." So I'm interested to see what everybody thinks about this one, because this was one of the ones that I was batting around in terms of putting this one in my top 20. To me, a good match with a great finish is the best way to sum this up. I've always thought Bret and Taker didn't have the best chemistry in the world, to be perfectly honest. This is a good match, the storyline's great, but there are points in this match where, and you can see it clearly when you watch the tape back, where the crowd's not with them during Bret's heat, and at one point Bret gets on the second rope and just flips the crowd off in a, I don't want to say a desperate attempt to get them kind of booing him and getting with him, and it doesn't really work. So there are points in this match where they are with it completely, don't get me wrong, they bite into the near falls, Taker's chokeslam, they do get into, and especially at the end, the finish is one of the best finishes I think the company's ever done. The face-to-face of Shawn making the count while he's looking Bret in the eyes. It's brilliant. It's a fantastic bit of theatre. On a different day, I probably would put this in the lower ebbs of my top 20. I think that this could replace any of the bottom three for me at any given point, but I want to see what everybody else thinks.
But yeah, I think another thing that's just always in the back of my mind when I was watching this match, I'm the same as you, Liam, as in, I never thought they had great chemistry together, because I always remember the Rumble 96.
Oh, that's bad.
That's a poor match.
And so, like, I always kind of have that in the back of my mind of just, like, two guys who I thought should have had a good match together didn't. And I was probably, like, playing in my head when I was watching this one back, so I couldn't fully invest in it. Yeah, it's probably one that maybe in time, if I do watch it again and again, I might change my mind and put it in there.
As much as I've been known to take pot shots at our emailers from time to time, let me show a rare moment of contrition here and offer a mea culpa to the emailers. My bad, if you will. I think we probably did miss a trick with this one. I will hold my hands up and say I was probably because I didn't include it in my top 20 just for, you know, in the interest of full disclosure. It's not as if I can sit here and say, oh, I included it, but it got bumped off by the rankings from the other guys. I didn't have it either, and that is an error on my part. Just hearing the description back from the emailer there, and recalling it, and I agree with you generally on the match. I would never call it a great match. There are one or two bits, and there's a spot in particular that always stuck in my mind that never worked, which was the old, when Brett been in the figure four around the post and he tried the sharpshooter.
Yeah, that
the
looks
post,
like ass.
And it just doesn't look right at all. So I would only go as far as to call it a good match. But the drama of that end sequence, if you like, is absolutely fantastic. And Brett doesn't hold back on that spit either.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
He
not.
Really yeah. goes for it he with Sean.
Man, he always gave it
and I'm also... I always mark out for Brett's little jig just as he gets up from pinning tape. As well.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it is fantastic.
Which is absolutely glorious, and the drama of that end sequence alone, combined with what is a decent match, probably should have meant that it cracked the top 20. I think.
It's tough because I think again without that great finish, I probably wouldn't even think to put it in the list at all. But obviously that does bump it up because the heat for that is really good.
Well, unlike Kyle, I will say that I voted for this and it got voted off.
Another one here that actually was up for consideration but didn't make the cut. Joe Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only. My favourite SummerSlam match is Warrior Savage at 1992. I love all the BS around it. This is a good match. I do like this match a lot. But I will say there are times when I've watched this back where I don't, and maybe it's because the charm in it is watching it the first time, not knowing the Warrior who sold out to Mr. Perfect element, which is what the match is pretty much based around. SummerSlam 92 is one of the first shows I ever watched, so if there was ever a built-in nostalgic reason for me to like this match, I would have it, but I just think I'm not as sold on this one in the top 20.
Yeah, the non-finish doesn't help, and contrary to Jerry Von Kramer, I'm not a big fan of the shenanigans involved. I don't like the element of who sold out to Mr. Perfect. Who are they going to interfere on behalf of? I think it detracts from the match. And like you say, Liam, if there was ever a match where we would really count nostalgia into it, you know, in that setting at Wembley, you know, with two of the biggest stars of the 80s,
with you there in person,
yeah, and it's just
on your 40th birthday.
I can't look past the sort of outside the ring element, and it just detracts from it for me. And I don't want to say it's a bad match, but I don't think the in-ring work is that good, and it's probably unfair in the sense that I always compare it to the Mania 7 match and have a difficult time separating the two.
And I don't find it as a comparison at all. It does seem like the whole majority of the match, if not the entire match itself, is all based around the Perfect stipulation, really, of like who sold out. And I've watched this match over and over and over again, and I do enjoy watching Savage, but I always feel that this match is, and I'm going off the top of my head how long it is,
it's a long one.
I'm imagining that it could easily be cut by 10 minutes. Every time I watch it, it just feels like it drags and drags and drags, because you know, like, well, at some point Perfect's going to come out, and so you're waiting for it, because the whole match is built around that appearance, and you have to wait forever for it. If the match was shorter and they did the whole screw job with Perfect and Ric Flair doing what they do, I probably would have rated it a bit higher, but it just dragged too long for me. And so because of that, it's a decent match, it's an okay match, but it's not top 20 material.
Booker Mania from the UK Fan Forum says, I would have Orton Benoit added to the list and I would rank it highly, but I understand why it's left off. I'm all for, you know, giving these matches obviously some consideration. I did watch this one back and I didn't think it was top 20 material. The crowd is flat and I think that hurts it a great deal.
The finish, I find, I don't know if everyone else would agree with this, just comes from nowhere, really. I don't think
there's a match.
No, but I mean, it's even when you get the RK out of nowhere these days, you know it's leading there. You get that sense of anticipation, that element of drama. And to me, that's not really there in this match. It literally is just he's hit the RKO. Oh shit, it's the end of the match. You know, you don't get that sense that they're reaching any sort of conclusion at all. And I don't think there's any drama involved. And I think as you say, Liam, the crowd is flat and that hurts it, and maybe I'm not recording it as well as I should. But I don't find any of it really that good in the ring. But I would just say, just quickly, at no point did I ever consider not including a Benoit match because of what happened.
Yeah, always kind of disappointed in this match, personally.
Yeah.
Decent, but structurally, yeah, it didn't build to a nice denouement. Always disappointed. I thought it should have been a much, much better match. Well, I hoped for a better match going in, and maybe that's, you know, my own bias, and I can't judge accurately, but it's always been kind of a bit, yeah, flat, really, for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, I mean, again, there were great individual moments in the match. Orton putting his feet up on the diving headbutt, or Benoit doing the tope and hitting his head on the barricade, which is what it is. Moving back to our list now, number 15, it's the Hart Foundation versus Demolition. Two out of three falls from SummerSlam 1990. Get to the feedback here. Matt D from Pro Wrestling Only says, there is no way in this world that the 90s Hart Demos match is better than the 88 Hart Demos match, except for some sort of cultural touchstone to people of a certain age. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum, this is a very good list overall. I don't agree with all of it, but that's unlikely anyway. Demolition Hart Foundation will be a clear number one on my list, but I'm slightly biased because it's in my top three ever. So I guess kind of giving credence there to what Matt D said. I do like the 88 match too, don't get me wrong. Brett's on the shoulders really good. You got the Fuji Kane stuff, you got a lot of salt stuff with Brett shaking his rest, you know, shaking his arm after the tag back to Brett. But I don't think it hits the heights of this match. There's a lot more. I mean, the crowd, I think, really helps this match a great deal. They are thunderous.
Molten
heart. If I recall, this was the first wrestling video I'd ever purchased. And this was the match that I watched back more than any other. Although, having said that, if people want to hold something against it because Axe and Smash look too much alike is a ridiculous premise, I will absolutely give you credit and let you have those. I will let you deduct those points because that is just fucking absurd.
Okay, this is the one where Crush has come into the group now and they're doing the whole Axe is under the ring, two out of three falls. And just, you know, they're isolating Brett. Keeping Anvil out of the way, and just from begin to end, the match's got great heat, really well worked, great finish in the end. Also, nice use of Legion of Doom coming out to you know, shit on the parade of Demolition. You know, the new guy Crush making the mistake by jumping on the referee to basically get disqualified for the first fall to go to the Hart Foundation. There's a lot of great stuff, and it's just a shame that Axe wasn't really in the match as much because he's just awesome. Though he hits a fucking awesome clothesline on Brett. Yeah, Brett, Axe barely fucking moves. he's just hitting a brick wall. Thoroughly entertaining match.
Yeah, you know you're doing something right when Bret Hart gets a huge, you know, pop for a near fall, a Russian leg sweep in the first fall.
Yeah.
Gee, me and you had this one a little bit low, but across the table, Kieran and Carl, you both have ranked this higher, which brought the average to 15, so thoughts across the table?
Kind of like Chase alluded to, really. I mean, tag matches are so easy to tell a real nice story, a nice narrative to them, and that's the MO of this match for me. I just really get a kick out of good stories in tag matches.
I think it's partly because there are so many tag matches, or just matches in general now, which, whilst they can be good matches, don't necessarily tell stories, and that was an art form that that Brett would carry in his singles career that I don't think many people do these days. It tells a great story of sort of Brett working from underneath against Demolition, the perfect use of the Neidhart for hot tags. You do get the running from the Legion of Doom. We, as you expressed earlier, Liam, the crowd are so hot for this. You know, the willing the Hart Foundation, because when we talked about this in previous podcasts, the Hart Foundation, whilst they were always popular, were never really treated as the focal point of the division. It was Demolition for a large part of that period. So it was, you know, you get the sense the fans are willing to have that moment as babyface, to have that crowning moment, which you get here. When you broach this as a topic, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that this was going to make my top 20.
It's the little details as well within a structural narrative that just makes all the difference. I mean, little things like after the second fall, which the Harts get, they knock Brett to the outside, and Anvil seems like genuinely worried and so on, and actually expresses that worry.
There's that one little cheap shot.
And they're thinking, oh, like Anvil might have to do this on his own now because Brett's completely spent. Also, like the bit at the end where like Brett eventually gets the kind of like that strange roll up at the end, and Anvil's like covering him.
He's
protecting him, almost like a pinfall attempt, because like the three guys are now in the ring, and he's, even though they're one, he's like laughing, going, we won, he's still looking out for his tag partner. He's not just celebrating, he's just like, he's protecting his partner, because though he's happy he's won, first and foremost he has to protect his partner, and you don't really get that sort of detail anymore.
We'll move along to number 14 here on the list, The Rock versus Brock Lesnar from 2002. Very high variance on this match around the table in terms of votes. I'm going to throw this one to Kieran because you vote this in your top 10, and I'll allow you to take the floor on this.
Well, although Chase likes to claim The Rock as his own, he's wrong.
He is, boys.
He's wrong. He's mine. Your boys, we're total bras. I wasn't planning on putting this match as high. But it was just watching Rock's performance as a subtle heel. He obviously, he set up coming to this match as the babyface. He's the babyface king. But the crowd is, it's quite,
it's New York.
It's New York, and they're a little ambivalent at the start. And Rock just he picks up on like the 10%, and he just threw a few little mannerisms and called them motherfuckers. he flips it total 70-30 in favor of Brock. I just thought it was absolutely beautiful, egoless wrestling by The Rock. He doesn't give a fuck if he gets booed or cheered. He's going to have as good a match as he can to get this crowd into it. And Brock's great, obviously, as this fucking beast. How old is he? Like 24?
25.
Jesus fuck. The guy is, I always love Brock anyway. He's not as good as a worker then as he is now. I've just met him in terms of physically, he's better probably, obviously, then. Mentally, he's much better now. I just love the subtlety of The Rock to turn this crowd into, and by the end it's just super hot. I thought it's kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah, great action, great near falls, Brock popping up on the people's elbow and decking him with a great clothesline. But I want to throw this to Carl here, because while you put this in your top 10, Carl did not put this in his top 20. So Carl, flip side of the coin, I want your opinion on this.
Oh, boo yourself.
Don't boo me, boo yourself.
This is one where I had a sort of a fonder recollection of this than was really sort of fair, I suppose. When you sent through the sort of the full the sort of the composite list and were asking us to do the ranking, I had to go back and watch this one, because I remember thinking back, thinking, yeah, I really enjoyed that. I don't recall the details too well, so before I make any decision on it, let me go back and watch it, make sure that I'm not just sort of looking at it through rose-tinted specs. And unfortunately, I felt after watching it that was the case. I agree with Kieran in the sense of it is brilliant work from The Rock to play the subtle heel at a time when so many people now just wouldn't know what to do. It would be the deer in the headlights. They wouldn't know how to react to it, or they would just ignore it and still work as if they were the babyface. And Heyman does some good work outside the ring as well, but I don't really think of them being particularly dramatic near falls, really. There's the kick out the Rock Bottom and the flip up for the people's elbow, but outside of that, I don't think of it as a particularly drama filled match in the match. So I think the crowd make it more than the match itself is actually good as a match.
But I don't hold that against it, because to me the crowd's a reflection of what they're doing in the ring, and because Rock's behaviour in the ring helped bring the reaction to what it was at a peak, that's why I think this does rank well.
Maybe one thing I should have mentioned, is up there for me top 5 in terms of a big match going in.
Oh, the build was awesome.
The training. It was a proper big fight. Maybe I'm overrating it because I think Rock's performance is a top 5 SummerSlam performance, but I'm not apologizing for that. It's my list, so fuck y'all.
I don't want to denigrate The Rock's performance by any means, and I'll agree with you wholeheartedly on the build, and it's the sort of build that really you would have wanted as well for Lesnar Angle going into Mania following that. Generally speaking, when it came to the rankings on these matches, I didn't really take the build into account, to be honest. I didn't really look at it until bell time.
The reason I'd say mention the build in this one, because it's the feeling I had going into the start of the match, surrounding the match, how big this match was, or, you know, a proper world title fight. As I said, I have a no consistent scale on ranking matches. You know, for me, the build played a part in the anticipation and the aura of the match, so therefore it kind of plays a role.
No, I understand that completely, and maybe it's unfair of me to not incorporate that. I'll acknowledge that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point almost where this match almost didn't make the list, because I didn't think of it initially when I had like my 10. when it was originally going to be that. And it was only like when I actually started thinking about that match, because I was just thinking SummerSlam 2002 needs to be better represented than this, because there's a lot of good matches on that show. And I was thinking about that match, and the more and more I thought about it, the more I was like smiling at myself and just thinking, oh man, this fucking match is amazing. How the fuck did we not put this in the listening straight away? So I messaged you, Liam, just saying like, I think I've got to change my mind on the Brock. I think I've got to put it in the 15 somewhere. I think I put it 12. Was it 11 or 12?
Let me just double check it. You'd have it at number 12.
I'd have it at number 12. With that match, because I was not completely on the Brock bandwagon at this point. Like, I was impressed with his debut, but I was the guy who was, I was the only guy, I guess, who was pissed off that he beat Rob Van Dam at the King of the Ring. Okay, because because in my head at the time, I was like, he's too green for this push right now. Rob Van Dam is more ready. He was ready like freaking months earlier. Rob Van Dam, it's his turn. It's his turn to get the chance and Brock down the line. So when it came up to like, okay, now it looks like it's going to be Rock Brock for SummerSlam, it came across as a very interesting match to watch, because it was like, this guy's only been in the company 5 months and he's facing The Rock, but at the same time it was just like, well, Rock's winning this, there's no way they're going to put the belt on a new guy, and no way is Rock going to do it, ignoring the fact that Rock's, you know, always does what's good for the business. It was just that time where it almost seemed like an inevitability, and this is where, as Kieran stated, The Rock's performance is so good. It's not just the fact that he was able to read the audience at the time and able to tweak his performance level, but it was also just what he did to make Brock look great. So I just remember like watching this match and being shocked that everyone was booing The Rock, and then being pleased when heel Rock started to like faintly emerge, because I've always preferred heel Rock. And I remember the exact moment where I started thinking like, okay, I see what Rock's doing now. Maybe this kid's actually going to win this. And it was the moment, I think it's after he hits the people's elbow with a rock bottom, and Brock kicks out, and the camera looks at Rock, and Rock's talking to himself. Starry eye, he's looking around himself, and he's just talking to himself. He's sort of like swearing at himself, like, what the fuck? He's just kicked out of that. What am I going to do now? Can I beat this guy? I don't know if I can beat this guy. And like the paranoia is coming through the character. And that's when I thought, like, holy shit, Rock's really putting this across, that Brock might have his number here. And that's when I started buying into Brock, and it's when he won the title and I thought, man, they really got some investment in him. 5 months, and he's got, that's even faster than Angle, you know, 5 months and this guy's got the belt. Rock's just done everything within his power on that night to put Brock over, and that's when I was all aboard the Brock train. The swearing at the crowd, like the spitting, or like the he's doing his babyface comeback, he's doing the kip-ups, and he's just doing it like really kind of aggressively, and like, fuck
you. It's even more subtle than that. It's just when Brock's selling, and Rock will like stand up, and it's the way he just arches his back and just kind of cockerel himself a little bit more than and a little bit more robotic than he would normally. It's just fantastic.
Moving on now to number 13 on the list. It's the Hart Foundation versus the Brainbusters from 1989. This pretty much landed. Everybody's votes were very similar around this region, 12 to 15. Hart's Busters, I was surprised it landed this high, to be quite honest.
Did we all put this ahead of Hart's demos?
Yeah, I did.
Everybody did, yeah.
Yeah, that's all right then.
Yeah, we got it right.
Yeah. This one, actually, you know, watch it in retrospect when, like, after you kind of know what the bus, because at the time I didn't know what the Busters had done with the Horsemen. It's just kind of like, holy fuck, this is so goddamn good. They're so fucking ace. Tully and Arn are just like, are they favourite tag team of all time?
They're up there.
I think so, yeah.
They're up there with the all time best.
Emotionally, you know, I always loved the Rockers, but they're just so fucking smooth, silk, just like a perfect team. And then obviously Brett is Brett, and you know, Anvil's there as well.
Anvil can hang. Anvil does, you know, what in the structure of the match with these three great talents, Anvil does his role perfectly well.
The key word there was smooth. Everything is crisp. Everything looks good.
Even to the point of when they miss the tag, it's so perfect, you know?
Yeah, and even sort of the little comedy element with the attempted tag on the foot. And it's one of the few matches I can recall. Another example would be Steiner's Heavenly Bodies that we referenced earlier, and something like the Midnights and Southern Boys, where you get that sustained shine for the babyface at the start of the match. It's that almost sort of outthinking yourself, if that makes sense, in the way that you're watching it and thinking, well, this is where the heels are going to get on top. Oh, no, this is where the heels are going to get on top. Oh, no, the hearts are still just saying one step ahead. And I love that because you see it so fleetingly.
Yeah.
That it's brilliant to see. And again, like Hearts and Demolition. It's a hot crowd. It's a really hot crowd, and it's obviously it's the opening match, which helps at a big show. The only critique I ever had of this match was the fact that it wasn't for the tag belts, but the Busters went over anyway.
And I think in part that might be why they gave so much of the match to the Hearts, in retrospect.
Possibly. In all honesty, I'd never thought of it that way. But when you're watching a match like that, and that's the only real nitpick that I can find, I think it's safe to say they did a damn fine job.
I think that's what we get into. It'd just be nitpicks. That's all it is, because the match is just fantastic. It's my favourite tag team versus my close second tag team. You know, it's just, and this match, from a Hart Foundation perspective, is why I love the Hart Foundation dynamic most in tag team wrestling, with the little guy and the big guy, because like, in a different way to like the Demolitions match, where you know, it's the big guys bullying the small guy. In this one, it's these two slightly smaller guys equally matched with Brett, working over Brett and doing everything they can, once they do eventually get him, just trying to avoid Anvil from getting the pin, because they know Anvil's the difference maker. They can't handle him. And it's just very simple storytelling, and it just shows how great that dynamic was. Tag team 101, fluid, silk, whatever freaking adjectives, whatever you want to describe them. You know, it's Brett, it's Tully, it's Dad. 13th place.
And Uncle Jim.
Yeah. 13th place, you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, we're taking the piss out of Anvil, but as you say, he works perfectly in the team with Brett. Brett is like the master of psychology, and yeah, the way they construct their matches, again, it's that beautiful story in the context of a tag match, and the Busters just being the fucking shit. And the sustained shine at the start, it's like a kick to watching a Flair Sting kind of in a tag form almost. It's like, he's still popping up. Oh no, they still got the shine. It's just
wonderful. It's just wonderful.
It's just some, like, to go back to Hearts Foundation again. But even like little moves when Brett gets onto the second rope.
The reverse
body slam when they put, just stuff like that. Which again you don't really see that move done. They will rip off so many different moves or try and do their own version, but they won't do some of the simplest stuff.
Moving on to number 11, another tie here in the cumulative voting. We'll get to the first one on the list here: Bret Hart versus Doink and Jerry Lawler from 1993. Just to get some feedback here, Lupidate from TPWW Forms again says, "I don't know why this pissed me off so much as a kid. Lawler was great in his role as was Born, but it was still infuriating that I didn't get the match I wanted the way I wanted it. I guess I was destined to be a member of the IWC, wasn't I?" And Lee123 from F4W says, "Great list. The only one that really doesn't belong is Brett versus Doink and Lawler. Some fun booking, but not a bell-to-bell classic." I think, and yeah, he's right, it's not a bell-to-bell classic by any stretch of the imagination. The charm of this match is what it is in its entirety. The reason why it's on this list, and the reason why, and again, this did get high variance in our individual votes around the table, which is key to note. I just think that this is one of the best heel performances I've ever seen in my life, and I might be biased because I bought into it hook, line, and sinker as a kid, but Jerry Lawler is just out of this freaking world in this match. You got Jerry Lawler's fantastic chicken shit promo at the start, you got Doink douching Bruce Hart with war in the face unexpected, which is just hysterical, including when Bruce takes a swing at a referee afterwards. The fun stuff with Doink and Brett, the Sharky Heenan on commentary just adds to this as well, screaming that it's a miracle that he can walk. The match is restarted, it's a fairly short affair, but again, Jerry Lawler gets some great heat. The finish, everybody knows what this is. The decision gets reversed, Lawler carried away on a stretcher, Bruce Owen and Brett beating the shit out of Lawler on the way out, and as they wheel him off on the stretcher, he raises the one finger in the air like he's actually done something. A finish that would get replicated at WrestleMania 14 with Rock and Shamrock, but I thought it was done better here, because I just think Lawler was such a great chicken shit. I can't speak highly enough about what I think of this this series. It's kind of a weird one to gauge, and I'm actually very happy that there was a tie finish for 11th place with this and the other match that we're about to get to, because they are, in my opinion, both the hardest matches to rank of any of the SummerSlam matches. Brett versus Doink and Lawler.
Yeah, I was glad with the tie, because the two matches in question I had, I think, next to each other, both because they are a gimmick match. Not in the traditional sense of a gimmick match. It's just a great piece of pro wrestling. Yeah, absolutely. For me, I think I went 15 or 14 with this one.
Yeah, 15.
So because of the very reason, bell to bell, it's not on par with some of the others. But fucking Lawler, I mean,
it's amazing.
This guy is like, don't
remember Jerry Lawler for the past three or how many years, and this guy's an all-time classic heel and face. He's just kind of, he's a remarkable man.
Absolutely, yep. Just
he is the king.
He is the king.
Yeah, it's just in terms of pro wrestling heel douchery, this is this from the commentary. Was it the rescue kids
from a burning bus?
It brings a smile to the face. I mean, just because purely bell to bell, I knocked it down lower than some, I think.
Yeah, but and that's, to me, that's completely understandable. If you don't even have this on your top 20 because you were looking at it from bell to bell,
yeah.
I couldn't argue it. Because, again, if this and the next one we're about to get to, it's so hard for me. If you're going to assign a star rating, where do you put it? Because what do you grade it on? Do you grade it on the work in the ring, or do you grade it on how successful it is at accomplishing its goal?
That's why I say, I said earlier, I've got no consistent way I score match to match. I just take everything for what it is. And this, although bell to bell not the best, it's just so fucking fun. It had to be on the list for me just for personal shits and giggles. It's just a lot of what's great about pro wrestling is in this match for me. So
it's the sum of the parts is what you judge it on. It's just everything that's involved. It's everybody's performance within this. King is phenomenal during this entire angle plus match. You know, the build up to it where King is berating Bret Hart and his family, it's just fantastic. And it's just to the point where he keeps berating him, and you're waiting for this confrontation between the two. And then as soon as you get it, he comes out on crutches with an ice pack on his knee, and you instantly know some bullshit's about to fly. And just the whole promo is just saying, like, you know, I come here to Detroit, I get one of these luxury models from the Motor City, and, like, you know, this old lady with a blue rinse who should have had her license revoked 50 years ago causes a 10-car pile-up. And it's just like, he's just this regurgitating this lie all over the place. And even Todd Pettingill's playing his part, where he's just doing these sly looks at the camera going, like, are you believing this as much as me? Because this is bullshit. The party just plays fantastic. It's just such a stupidity of, like, okay, so this guy's, like, injured his legs, but yet he still had time to put his ring gear on and then wrap his knee up with the ice pack. It's just the levels of bullshit from King.
I've got to add one little thing here before you go on. Yeah. The line that absolutely slays me every time is after he's done everything for this match to come to place, and then he comes out with the ice pack on his knee and he comes up with this complete pile of horseshit. He then follows it up with, Bret Hart, let me tell you something, you stinking coward.
I could still kick your ass with one leg. It's a, like, stinking coward. He still calls him out. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And just, like, bringing Doink out, who's just, like, you know, we can talk about how great he is in this role.
The Royal Jester.
Yeah, the Royal Jester. And just, you know, added points, bonus points, more than anything else, needs to be given for throwing water over Bruce's face. Just for that. You could, at the same time, you could probably detract points for what Owen Hart's wearing. The old leather trousers and cowboy boots combo with leather tie or vinyl, you can't quite tell. But just
he was matching.
At least he was matching, exactly. He's colour coordinated, I guess.
You see him in high energy, he's another one for fashion.
I guess so. Suddenly Bobby Heenan, like, this is 3 minutes into the match, Bobby Heenan turns around and says, oh, Jerry King's absolutely brave after this 18-19 car pile-up. So in 3 minutes it's doubled. The pile-up's doubled, and he just goes, he went up and rescued a bus full of orphans and all that. It's just like, Heenan's just like, you know, the toast has already been buttered, but now he's putting on the jam, you know. He's just like let's put this shit on. And it's fucking fantastic. And just King's being a douche, he's cheating, he's using the crutches,
the bicep
with the eyes wide. It's just absolutely fantastic. The finish is great as well. I don't think there's many babyfaces, particularly around that time period, that could get away with putting on submission hold and leaving it on there for that amount of time, and the crowd not only to be hot, but get hotter the longer he holds the puts the move on for. For a babyface to show such kind of disregard, I guess, for their opponent because of such a hatred that was built up, and the fans are loving it.
It's because King's a douche. He's such a douche.
And Bret Hart's great in this as well. Bret Hart just, like, play by the book of how to be the babyface, the wronged babyface, and be pissed off when the decision's overturned.
There's not an awful lot I can add to what's already been said. It's about the story. It's not a Matt classic. It's not a wrestling clinic or anything, but it is the story. And it just goes to show, and as Kieran said, it's nice to have these bits to look back on.
to remember the greatness of Jerry Lawler, which is lost on a modern audience because all they're used to is the appalling commentator that he's become. But it's nice to have those bits to look back on, and it just shows how much mileage there is in playing the chicken shit heel. You know, it's a role that's been lost in wrestling now. So again, it's nice from that perspective to be able to look back on just how much fun the chicken shit heel can make the story. Yeah, as far as the ending with the crowd acting like they are, it's because Jerry Lawler was so fantastic in the role, and you could completely, through a fan's eyes, defend everything Brett did because of the way Lawler had insulted his parents beforehand. You know,
why don't you put your remember the old lady backwards and eat himself to death?
That's the one. It's really fun. It's really enjoyable, and I think thoroughly deserving of being on the list.
Moving along now to the other number 11 on this list, tied result here, Brock Lesnar, John Cena from last year's SummerSlam 2014, of course. Number one WWF fan from TPWW says, I'm surprised Lesnar versus Cena is ranked higher than Bryan Cena. The story told with Lesnar-Cena was better, but I don't know if I'd say it was a better match overall. I think it comes down to how you judge a wrestling match. A harmonic generator from the UK fan forum says, this is probably top three for me. The shock value of the destruction of Cena, and the fact that the shock value hooked me into the match more than I've been hooked in since probably the Taker Triple H WrestleMania matches. Not a bad list at all, though. No glaring omissions from me. Undefeated Steak from the UK fan forum says, I'd put this in the top three as well. One of those rare matches that sucks you in and you're glued from start to finish. The shock value, as Harmonic Generator said, added to the drama. And Tiger Rick, also from the UK fan forum, says, I love the joint 11th. Two matches that could not be more different. As much as I love the angle in the Lawler match and think the doink portion is really good action, it's not in the league of the others in that top 15. Certainly not in the same league as the brutally brilliant Cena-Lesnar. Just to get to our rankings here, we all pretty much had this around the same region, apart from Carl, who voted this higher than anybody at number 7, so cracking your top 10 in impressive fashion here for Lesnar-Cena.
And part of the reason is because the what the email has touched on there, that the shock element to it, in the sense of we've all watched wrestling for so long now, and we always think we know how it's going to go, and how things are going to be laid out, and we're sort of, whilst we enjoy good wrestling, we are to an extent jaded. So to be shocked by that match in the way that I was, and for me to be able to sort of just completely lose almost sort of inhibitions about it, the things that hold you back, and just be completely immersed in it, and it's the shock that was able to do that. I think part of the reason I'd had it ranked so high is it does tell for me the perfect story of the brutal monster heel and a valiant babyface, scrapping and clawing, trying to get any offense he can against this unstoppable beast. And it was gratifying to see it because it was always the way that you felt sort of after the match when you're able to digest anything. This is what you do with Brock Lesnar. This is what you should have done from the very start. And it was gratifying.
The match you should have done at the start.
Yeah, that's exactly what should have happened. So for them to actually go ahead and eventually do it was brilliant. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I watched it with you guys,
you did,
if I remember rightly. And I think the line I uttered afterwards was, that was a glorious shit-kicking. But it just, because of the way it was constructed, to me, it had that sense of legitimacy as well. It had a sense of realism. It felt very real to me in the way that it was constructed. It was all perfectly plausible, perfectly believable. And for those reasons, that's why it cracked my top 10.
Yeah, I consciously ranked this and the Lawler match next to each other on my list, so it shows my wrestling profitness that they actually get tied in the aggregate list. The reason being, they're both so different to everything else on the list. What this match was, I think, I can't remember who said it, it was just so engrossing. I think we all saw it together here, and it was, we were almost in silence watching this thing because it's so unlike what you normally see, especially in the WWE. And it was engrossing, it was different, it was ballsy, brilliant booking. Cena is, I said it, he's massively underrated as a babyface, by most, just really enjoyable. And he clinks another glass. Carl.
yeah, variety's the spice of life, and it's just and to bring it back to what I said at the start of the podcast,
well,
where
let's just say, let's not cast everyone with the same brush as myself in terms of the jaded
okay,
level.
Well, I'll cast myself with the same brush that you used. So at the start of the podcast, when I stated that after 2002 I really struggled to find key matches, but this was one that came immediately to light. It was like it for me at the time of making the list, this was what I think I rated the highest of the four post 2002 matches. It's just it was a great spectacle. This was the match that we wanted to have back at Extreme Rules in 2012. We don't get surprised by wrestling anymore, and that's what we want. We want to be surprised, and this was something that surprised me, because it was just like I never in the month of Sundays would have thought that Cena would have got almost essentially jobbed out like this in terms of like, and Cena and Kieran emphasised it brilliantly, like John Cena is great in this role, you know, so you can compare it in essence to the Bryan match, is Cena putting over another guy just in a different way.
Yeah, there's not too much I can add to the eloquent words spoken around the table. In terms of comparing it to Bryan and Cena, it's hard to compare this match from anything else. It's a completely different style of match, so I think it's difficult to do. But again, in terms of effectiveness, you were left with a certain feeling that you weren't left with in Bryan and Cena for very long. So again, the effectiveness on the night, I think, you know, struck a greater chord. To get to some more notable omissions, ones that we didn't get to on the list, DMJ from Pro Wrestling Only says Hulk Hogan versus Shawn Michaels somewhere in the top 20. As much as that match is cartoonish and HBK is super unprofessional, it was the match that brought me back into being a WWE fan after 4 or 5 years about not caring at all about pro wrestling. I've rewatched it since, and it is an absurd match, but it's also the last Hogan match that interested me at all. I'd readily rewatch Hogan HBK for its surreal value before I'd rewatch Triple H Shawn Michaels. Anyone else have any secret enjoyment out of that match? And Gordon the Gopher from the UK Fan Forum adds that this one being omitted makes me sad.
All I'll say is, once again, Shawn Michaels is absolutely vindicated in his actions.
Yeah, I think I do think this is an enjoyable match, and I don't think that people thought this match was as silly until that Benny Hill video came out on YouTube that pretty much made Shawn Michaels look like he was horsing around, which he was. Top 20 match, I couldn't say personally speaking, but a fantastic effort from Shawn.
There's an enjoyable element to it, and I think you're right. A lot of the criticism it gets comes very much after the fact. I think one or two people may have said they didn't like it, and a lot of others jumped on the bandwagon with regards to Sean's overacting, let's say. But
the big boot sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. But funny nonetheless. certainly not a top 20 in my book.
Demo Time 2 from Wrestling Forum says the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels versus the model Rick Martel in the No Touching the Face match. This match is just fucking brilliant. Sure, to the early 90s crowd, this may have been a little over their heads, but regardless, I dare you to watch this match and not crack the fuck up. We have two great workers here involved, plus throw my favourite female of all time in Sherry, and Bobby Heenan and Vince McMahon at the announce table, and you have yourself a work of art. Sure, many of the matches you listed may be better technical wrestling matches, and probably had a lot more at stake, but I could watch this HBK on Martel match over and over again. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting candidate. I wouldn't put this top 20. I appreciate the entertaining elements of it, and I think I'm going to be grateful also posted the great Rick Martel wink from the build-up to Sherry. Yeah, you know the one. But yeah, I couldn't say top 20. The number of matches we omitted from this list that are better than this.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much sums it up. As fun as it is, there's a lot better matches, so no controversy there for me. There's better matches. I don't actually even find it that funny.
I love this match. I love this match, and I think it's hilarious. And I've previously on other podcasts, I've put this match over as being hugely entertaining. But even I don't have the balls to claim this is a top 20 match. Even though I was thinking I do love that match. No, I'm not going to go there. There's always just one step too far.
Here's one that you did put in your top 20 though, G. Tanis Sarway from Pro Wrestling Only says, one match I feel many don't discuss as one of the great SummerSlam matches is the Bull Nakano Alundra Blaze match from 1994. Besides Bret and Owen, it's the strongest match on the show and one of the best that year. Just the simple story of how the undersized hero contends and defeats the monster. Loving the shows, guys. Keep it up.
Yeah. I had this one in my top 10.
Which stunned me.
I had this in my top 10.
Chase endorses women's wrestling. Who the fucking thing?
Hey, consistent with the gimmick. Yeah, I had it in my top 10. I don't think anyone else voted for it, obviously, hence why it's not in the top 20. This match, I watched this like back retrospectively. I didn't watch it at the time. And my friend showed me the show, and I was watching this match. And at this time, the only kind of women's wrestling or any women's involvement in wrestling I had at the time was either like Miss Elizabeth and Sensational Sherry just doing things at ringside, or what was happening at the time in the Attitude Era, which was just mud wrestling or whatever they were doing at the time.
Sable in the t-shirt spot.
Sable t-shirt spot, you know, King selling with the handprints on the boobs and everything. That's pretty much all you got. So when I sat down and I watched this match, and it was more to do with Bull Nakano than Alundra Blaze, even though Alundra Blaze was good in the match, I was absolutely blown away watching Bull Nakano at the stuff she was doing in the ring, and just thinking like, well, why can't any of the other women before and since do this stuff? Why can't they do like top rope leg drops and or the scorpion cross lock, which just blew my mind. I've never seen that move before. I was just really impressed with Bull Nakano, and I thought Alundra Blaze was really athletic, a good kind of babyface foil to this powerhouse. I just really like it because it just kind of opened my eyes as to women in wrestling can be more than just the valet or just, you know, get your tits out for the lads.
This is why I'm convinced that when it comes, this G and women's wrestling thing is all a work. It has to be a work, because no one in their right mind would put this match in their top 10.
Dave Meltzer gave this 3.5 stars in the Observer at the time. It is a good match. The crowd's hot for it. I'm not going to take away from it. But to me, this fits more in that mold of that kind of area of matches that is, if we were going to rate from like the full, like a 40 or 50, it would probably be on the outskirts there, because this to me fits in that mold of like the Tajiri versus X-Pac, you know, Van Damme versus Jeff Hardy, that kind of like that level of match where it's a very good entertaining match, the crowd's hot, but it has no real significance, and it's not a blowaway match for the ages by any stretch of the imagination. But again, I couldn't honestly in good conscience say top 20.
I hadn't seen anything like that from women's wrestling before, so that's why I held it in such high regard, because in a similar but I guess different way, it was a spectacle to me in the same way as like the Brett Lawler or the Brock's Cena was, because it was something different to me.
It might not be at the time,
might not be different to you guys, but it was different to me because I'd never seen something like that, so it resonates with me a lot more than other matches.
Moving now back to our list, we are in the top 10, and at number 10 is Brock Lesnar versus CM Punk from 2013, the second match from that show to contribute to this list. Bia Schwale from Pro Wrestling Only says, the finish on Lesnar Punk bothers me too much for it to be above Brian Cena for the two great matches from 2013. I actually just like Cena and Brian Bettron the whole, but if there had to be a deciding factor, the disparity between the finishes is it. I absolutely, personally, adore this match. I rated this at number 7. Carl, I think you put this in your top 10 too. He's number 6, if I'm not mistaken. We rate this very high. I think that this is a blinder. I think that this is better than Brian and Cena. I think that the crowd heat tells you it's better than Brian and Cena, because even though Brian Cena is in theory face-face, The makeup of the crowd and the way that obviously John Cena's been for years now, that was still one guy heavily cheered, the other guy not cheered very much, roundly booed as well. And I think that the Lesnar Punk dynamic, with as much credibility and as realism and whatever as Brock Lesnar has, he was such a fantastic bully and just the guy that's just throwing Punk around at will in the early stages. Punk gets the lucky knee into the jaw to kind of rock him a little bit, but the ebb and the flow of the match as the pace goes on, you can be halfway through the match watching this thing, Lesnar gets the Kimura on for the first time, Punk transitions it to a Jujigatami, and the crowd is going absolutely fucking ballistic. The crowd is way hotter for this match than they are for Bryan and Cena, and that had a lot more kind of built-in interest for the fact that it's Daniel Bryan going for the title. So I think that that speaks to the layout of the match. I think it speaks to the performance of Lesnar. Punk was very good in his role as well. Heyman's fantastic. I think that this is absolutely amazing match. Top 10 for me.
Absolutely brilliant. One, I think, just as a match in general, is one that's often overlooked when people talk about great matches, particularly of the more modern era. When we talked before about Brock and Rock and how I didn't feel there was enough sense of drama in false finishes or elements where it was perceived to be a finish, this, to me, is the exact opposite of that. The crowd are so with this. They think the Kimura is going to be the finish. You know, they think an F5 is going to be a finish, you know, go to sleep, what sort of thing.
Anaconda Vice.
The crowd are so with it. Lesnar, to your point, does play his role brilliantly in the early stages of the match as the bully. And it's got that logical element to it, like you say, the lucky knee to the jaw, you know, and they tease the idea of, oh, the monster's vulnerable. You know, so it's again, it's the babyface fighting from underneath at first.
Oh, for sure.
Heyman is brilliant as good a role as I think he plays in the Brock Rock match, I think his performance in this match is better tenfold. I think it's just absolutely brilliant, a fantastic match all round, such drama, and I can't say enough positive things about it.
Both Kieran and G, I believe you rate this below the top 15, so I'm curious as to why. Yeah,
maybe I was a little harsh. CM Punk should be fucking ashamed to wear a Gracie hoodie with that fucking triangle.
Oh my god, thank you. Holy shit.
The loosest triangle.
Oh my god.
I mean, yeah.
Well, at least Brock powerbombed him out of it.
First of all, okay, you can't do it because Brock's shoulder's so fucking big. But don't do the spot if it looks so stupid. It's more like it's a polygon kind of shape he's got on the go rather than the triangle. I mean, it's fantastic, don't get me wrong. And Brock is just... I think I texted you, was this when I texted you saying Brock's like just the best, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy... My problem with the match, and it's just what held it down for me in terms of on the all-time scale of SummerSlam, I just don't buy Punk as a guy who have a fucking prayer against Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. And some people in the feedback echo that sentiment.
Hey, completely personal, but the flip side of that is Brock almost had me believing because he's such a fucking great heel and a great worker. It is really good and it's super hot. It was just those minor things that for me personally, when ranking against others, I put it lower than you guys. So it's that Punk believability thing for me. And some people think that's stupid, and that's, you know, I accept that. It's just my personal, given the gimmick he works, I think everything's in context. The gimmick that Punk likes to portray, he comes out doing the Vandalay wrists, and it's like he's got the gait of a girl, he can't kick for shit, he's less athletic than Chase.
When I'm gauging this, if the crowd didn't buy it, I would hold it against it a lot more. But the crowd is, like I said, the crowd is hot for this match consistently from start to finish, and get more rowdy than they do for the main event. And I think that's a hell of an achievement when you got Brock Lesnar with all the built-in equity he has as a bad motherfucker, and CM Punk, who I think it's a hell of an accomplishment, because he made it. He made himself look so good by throwing him around. He made it look like it was going to be a mountain to climb, and Punk was having to fight for every step of the mountain as he tried to climb it. And when he actually got to the top on the go to sleep, he got fucked out of it by Heyman, and the crowd just fucking buys it hook, line, and sinker. And to me, that's a hell of an accomplishment. Lesnar still wins. He gets everything out of it. But I think I adore this match.
No, I mean, in retrospect, I will admit I've probably ranked it too low. It's just lists, being lists, whatever. Maybe I didn't probably rate Punk as a face working from underneath and scratching and clawing probably as high as you did. I think that's... I remember specifically watching this match thinking Punk's got weaknesses as a face for me. What held him back? And then I will say maybe that's what held him back as a draw. I just don't think he projects himself and works from underneath as well as... and people will hate it. John Cena is a much better working babyface than Punk. I really believe that. It's as fucking the stick I'll probably get for saying that. I've thought it for a while. He's just, and I think that's always been the weakness with Punk in terms of being a draw. Maybe
when it came to like this match, and I remember you like mentioning it. It was Liam. It was you that mentioned it, saying about how good it was. I was trying to remember it, and I was like, well, I remember it being a good match. But I remember the show being more about Brian. So I thought, like, I'm really going to need to... Because you're really trying to sell it to me. And you do, and I was like, okay, I'm going to have to watch this match again to really kind of rate it. Because I just remember it being a good match, but not a great match. So I watched it again. And it's a great match. And it's just... And so I agree with everything that Carl and Liam said. But I also agree with everything that Kieran said. Brock's performance is phenomenal. And he actually does it again with Roman Reigns this year, where when CM Punk starts doing the high kicks on Brock's head, and very similar to when Roman Reigns was doing the Superman punch on him, Brock's doing that thing where he's stumbling and bouncing off against the ropes, but he's not going down. And it's just that thing of, like, Brock's so fucking good. He's so clever, and to make it say, like, I'm going to give him enough to make the crowd think that I'm on the ropes, I'm reeling, but I'm not dropping for him yet.
I think it's
and that's why he's so fucking good.
The first, I think it's, I thought the first, is it the first one through the rope, when he knees him through the ropes and he kind of rolls out, and it's, yeah. That is just, it's beautiful. Just to reiterate the point, I think something else that's actually lame when you were going back and forth about this match, the Punk performance, it just made me think of last week's show, the dream match we never saw.
I'd really love to see this match worked with like a really amazing underdog babyface. And it's like, god damn, I wish I'd seen Brock and Michaels. but that was my mentality when judging this match. So,
or probably if he went with someone more more recent, maybe Brian could have done a pretty good job of being the underdog.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Or would that have been even less believable because he's probably smaller?
Brian is more believable at work, I think, for me. I just, the size may have been too much of a side differential. But I know we never saw it, who knows?
Yeah. However, similar, like I said, that the Rock Brock match was all about The Rock, I think this was all about Brock and just showing how good he is.
Moving on now to number 9 on the list, we're going back to 2001, Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle. The Condor from TPWW says, Austin Angle is top 3 for me, and Mr. Canada from FOW says, if this had a proper finish, it might be number 1. So I'm keen to see what everybody thinks, because around the table, we pretty much, Kieran, Carl, and myself, we rated this one pretty high. G, you rated this one lower. But to get to Kieran's thoughts, because you rate this as your number 4 match of all time.
Yeah, like going in from the videos, I was not expecting to, because both guys are so miscast. Obviously, we know Austin is an all-time great babyface, and we know he's great as a heel as well. But just in the context of this match, miscast. Angle, he's still wacky as fuck, but he's the babyface against the badass Steve Austin, and it's like this. So both guys are so miscast. But Jesus fucking Christ, these two performances are just unbelievable. I mean, Austin is just an animal, and Kurt, just the most natural wrestler ever. Gosh, surely there can be no question of that. I just was blown away by the both guys working heel face when I didn't expect them to be. And yeah, I mean, if this had a good finish, it'd be number one or two.
This would take some beating if it had a great finish.
Yeah, it would take some beating, because I was so impressed with both guys. Just an amazing work by both guys.
Austin's so savage, going to the post like 5-6 times in a row, busts him open, just stun after stun. He can't beat him. And then Angle, who's bleeding, starts actually making the rally and gets the comeback, and just when he gets the Angle slam, he gets fucked over. So yeah, just a great story, and just like I said, phenomenal performances.
So many things I love about this match, from the vicious streak of heel Steve Austin to Kurt's comeback, and the one that always sticks in my mind when it comes to Kurt in this match is the ankle lock on the outside.
I was going to say the same thing.
The ankle lock on the outside, when he's pissing of blood and he's just screaming and he's wrenching the ankle and he drags Austin back into the ring. It's just a magic moment for me, and a wonderful visual of Austin in that ankle lock, desperately trying to get over the barricade away, and a bloody Angle just wrenching it for all he's worth. Brilliant match. It would absolutely be higher for me with a clean finish. I can understand why they went with this finish, considering what was coming at Unforgiven and it being Kurt's hometown and all that, the sort of things that go with it. So I understand it, particularly when you get the aftermath of the match with Angle on stood on the apron when he realises what Nick Patrick's done, and you're just getting there screaming, "No, no, no, you screwed me, you son of a bitch." Like Brock Cena, I can't say enough good things about this match. I absolutely love it, and it's one of those where whilst I was nostalgic about some matches and watched them back and it sort of brought me back down to earth a little bit, I watched this back several times, particularly last week I watched it back just to get a better handle on it again, and I thought it was even better than I remembered.
The comparison with Brian Cena is an interesting one, because the finish on both of them, or the post-match, whatever you like to say, hurts them both. But for me, Angle and Austin, you're living and dying with Angle in this match, and you can just see the savageness of Austin. There's a better story from the individuals than there is in Brian Cena. Brian Cena is very fun action all the way through, very good action, excellent action, much like this, but there's a deeper sense of purpose here with Austin and Angle, even if it's telling a different story. G, you rated this one lower, so go ahead.
I'd only ever seen the match once before, at the time, as when it happened. I saw it live, and I don't remember being that particularly in favour of it. Almost in a counterpoint to the Brett Lawler, where something that was just about passable, or at least good from an in-ring action, was heightened by all the little bits and bobs, all the little kind of garnishes and so on. This is a match where probably a really good match is affected for me by all the little gubbins that I just hated. I didn't like the dynamic Kurt as the babyface and Austin as a heel. It didn't seem, when I was watching it at the time, it didn't seem very a natural fit for those two to work together. It seemed much better to be the opposite way round. And it's all the other little things of, like, that was in the back of my mind as I was watching this at the time, and I felt exactly the same way when I watched it again yesterday. The whole invasion angle and the build to this match is still playing in my mind as being not particularly memorable. And I just remember at the time when I watched it, I was more invested in the Rock Booker T match because of The Rock returning. And that just seemed to be much more of a natural fit. They were playing their roles the right way round. The Rock is the babyface, Booker T is the heel. And it's probably my own failing in not being able to disassociate all that. Because the actual in-ring action itself is really great. Austin isolate the performance and ignore the invasion angle. This version of Austin, if you pretend that the babyface Austin didn't exist, this version of Austin is fantastic as this ruthless piece of shit. I mean, just at the beginning of the match, where they're staring each other down, and you can sense it, and you know, and you mentioned like when you mentioned the spot with Angle putting the ankle lock to the outside, and Angle's bleeding down his face, and he's whirring all over the place. I think the fact that Angle bled, and he bled a lot, really added something to it. I don't know. I can't feel particularly impassioned by it as you guys. I can't take away all the detracting factors for me, but I'm not going to complain that it's in the top 10 if you three guys and the listeners feel so passionately about it. It's just it kind of slightly falls on deaf ears for me.
Moving on to number 8, it's Kurt Angle's second contribution to this list against Rey Mysterio from 2002. Another interesting one here in the sense that two of us, myself and Carl, voted this out of the top 10. Two of you, Kieran and G, voted this in. Just to get some very quick feedback here, Fellatio Lips from the UK Fan Forum says, "I can't argue with your number one, but Angle vs. Mysterio is one of the best pay-per-view openers ever, not just at SummerSlam, and I'd have that as my number two, which is higher than both of you guys have it, so that's incredibly high praise for this match. Cracking opener.
Best 10 minute match in history."
Didn't even go that long, did it?
Was it
8:20, something
with,
like that?
With intros, yeah. But it's a 15 minute match rammed into an 8 minute match, but it's not a clusterfuck, and it's smooth as hell. Ray's just brilliant. Kurt is a genius. I just really love this match. I just think it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, where did I put it?
Six.
Yeah, yeah, I'll stand by that. Just the fact that it was so short, I mean, it's kind of the charm of it. But if it was 13, 14, 15, 16 minutes, well, who knows, different match, but they crammed so much in, but it absolutely fit. It didn't hurt the psychology. We were ramming so much in. I just love this match.
When I think of great opening matches, it's this and Bret Owen that I immediately think of. I for one, I don't give a shit if it was 8 minutes or 10 minutes. It doesn't detract from the fact how great it was. The reason why I really love this match, because for me at the time it came out almost out of nowhere, because Rey Mysterio's just kind of debuted, and I'm fucking excited. This guy's great, but I'm worried because of Vince McMahon, because he's a cunt and he doesn't like short people. And I'm thinking he's gonna fuck this. And then like I heard he's gonna wrestle Angle, and I was like, and then stupidly I thought, like, oh, I don't know if that's the right opponent or not. I don't know if Angle can keep up with him.
No, you're not alone. At the time, I know there's a lot of people who are asking the same question.
Yeah, I thought, like, Angle's a great wrestler, but Angle works at a particular pace. He works at a pace of, like, Austin. Imagine my surprise when, like, just Kurt is not just able to go at the same pace, but just going like a fucking freight train with him. And Angle's just proven. This is what, like, when I was a fan of Angle, but this is when I was really on the bandwagon of just like, okay, Kurt might just be God right now. He might just be God walking on the earth. And Rey Mysterio, just him doing everything that I remember Rey Mysterio doing in WCW, just being his overall greatness, I'm thinking, and the crowd fucking loving it, just eating everything Rey Mysterio's doing, and I'm thinking, there is no way that cunt can fuck this up. He's got to put this guy over. Angle's making me fucking cream crackered. Just, yeah, top 10, obviously.
Carl, me and you, we differed in our opinions. I'll throw this to yourself.
I won't dispute what the other two have said about it being a really good match, and to G's point, it is testament to how great, just how fantastic a worker Kurt Angle is, and how versatile he is. You know, to go from 2001 and Austin to that match in 2002 with Ray, I think is a good contrast. And if you're looking at
arguably the best opener. I think you can certainly make a case for it. But we're not building the greatest card here. We're ranking individual matches. And whilst I really enjoy it, and I don't think I had it ranked ridiculously low, but
no,
any
no,
means,
it's 13.
In my personal opinion.
Still very high praise.
The fact that it is less than 9 minutes, as much as they cram in, the fact that it's less than 9 minutes did affect it a bit, to be honest.
This to me is like the best version of what we were talking about with like the Alundra Blaze versus Bull Nakano or the X-Pac versus. It's like it's a match that really has no real wider meaning at all. It's just stuck there to be a great piece of wrestling entertainment, and it just exceeds all expectations and is an absolute blinder for the ages, in my opinion. It is a fantastic match. There's just that little thing that holds me back from putting it higher, just because it didn't mean anything more than what, if you see what I'm saying. Same with Brock and Punk. It's the same with Brock and Punk. Afterwards, it meant nothing anyway. In its isolation, it was great.
It did have relevance because it was kind of like, okay, they're invested in Rey Mysterio, and it was kind of like the beginning of Mysterio, that he's going to have a good run in the company, that he's not just going to be an Ultimo Dragon.
Moving on to number 7 here, we actually have two ladder matches in a row here, and at number 7, Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon from 1995, and I was very surprised that this came behind the next ladder match we're going to talk about, but we'll get to this one here. Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, yeah baby, from thewrestlingforum.com. It says, I think Shawn Razor is a little underrated generally and have it as a solid number 3. Mad Dog from Pro Wrestling Only says, this is top 5. I personally like this better than the Mania 10 match. And Empress 84 from F4W says, Ramon and Michaels is way too low. At the very least, it's better than the TLC Spot Fest. So we'll get to this one here. Kieran, it was mentioned there, you did rate this is number 3.
Yeah, that's the correct answer.
I had this at number 5.
I didn't say so myself.
Not too far behind.
Yeah. I don't know if I can be, you know, unbiased talking about it. It's Shawn as a babyface winning a ladder match. So like the world had righted the wrongs for me. completely different to the WrestleMania 10 match, and I prefer the WrestleMania 10 match. I think it's. I'm not sure how other people think about that, if they I suppose your taste. I just thought the WrestleMania 10 match was just a different kind of work of art. This is just Shawn being a fantastic baby face you know, god damn, the spot when he tweaks his knee, come on, that's
when he puts it through the ladder,
yeah,
you know? How about when he suplexes him to the floor and he cracks his foot on the barricade, oh, to set it up later on?
Come on, Shawn Michaels.
it's a very different match from the WrestleMania match,
totally.
And I think that what your natural gravitation is towards what you want out of wrestling kind of pulls you towards which one of these matches you like. If you like the working over the body part, Razor working over the leg in this match is absolutely fantastic. It is the dropping the ladder on purpose after Shawn accidentally dropped it earlier on, an amazing match.
I just to kind of, as you've alluded to, I just prefer this much more to the other ladder match that's going to be on this list, which is ironic given the statement you just made that I prefer the Spot Fest. See, I don't think
I'm not saying I didn't call it a Spot Fest.
But in relative terms, like it is WrestleMania 10 isn't a Spot Fest, it's Shawn dancing with a ladder. you rank the other ladder match above this? Jesus.
I would critique you there for the way you were talking about that match, but considering what I previously said about Bret Austin WrestleMania 13 and the pot of dirt and flour analogy, I'm on no solid ground to criticise. Dare I say there's more psychology to the second match. That being said, I'm with you in the sense of I prefer WrestleMania 10 to SummerSlam 95, and it's always difficult because WrestleMania 10 was the first one, it's always going to be difficult to sort of go past that in people's
eyes and minds. It's very difficult to recapture a dynamic and to pass it.
I think that's kind of what's for me is kind of great about this match is that, yeah, they don't try and replicate and do another spot for it. They just work a complete, and obviously the dynamic of Shawn being a face, it helps.
Yeah, it's nice to have that change of the dynamic with Shawn as a face. Doc Hendricks does annoy me sometimes on the call, I'll be honest.
Come on, Razor.
Come on, Shawn. But a really good match. And on the subject of this one being ranked below the other one, I'm curious because I don't want to point fingers here, but I ranked this above Triple H and The Rock.
Indeed you did.
You did. Liam.
Yeah, I rated this one above the other
which
one.
Austin! Which makes me question, just where did you rank this?
I've got the listings here. G rated this as...
slap him in the face with it.
As the 14th best match in SummerSlam history.
because I didn't really watch anything from 95, and so I always thought it was simply the WrestleMania 10 ladder match, and then the next ladder match was SummerSlam 98.
Just to clarify for those who are listening for the first time, you had a gap in your wrestling watching between this period of time.
I didn't know about this until much later on, because no one ever mentioned it to me, so I didn't know. I will turn around and say, when I did eventually see the match, I really enjoyed the match. I thought it was great. Shawn Michaels, great, yeah, obviously. Razor Ramon, great, absolutely fantastic. I don't think it's as good as WrestleMania 10, personally, but then WrestleMania 10's got so much history to it, it's never going to, no matter how much you want to try. But the reason why I hold this one lower is, again, it's that thing of emotional connection. I don't have it the same as you. I'm not the biggest Shawn Michaels fan. I do like him, but I wasn't watching from that time period. So it's just something where I'm just watching something out of context after I've seen numerous other ladder matches and TLCs. It's not going to resonate with me as much as you guys. It wasn't the first ladder match. It wasn't the second ladder match I ever saw. I respect what went into the match, and I like the match as an individual moment, but the 12 that I have before it have much more personal relevance to myself.
You touch on something that we can obviously broach into in a couple of matches' time about the impact on ladder matches over time, and how people who watched matches from later on look back on those first two Shawn Ray's ones if they didn't watch them at the time. There is a disconnect there, and it's very prevalent, not just on the internet, but obviously in real life. Anybody that I've spoken to who was a fan during the Attitude Era, and I said, well, if you think this match is good, go back and watch Shawn and Razor, and they've come back to me and said, I didn't think it was quite as spectacular, because they're not looking through the same lens we did at the time. Moving on now to the next ladder match, since we're on the subject anyway. At number 6, Triple H versus Rock from 1998. A bit of feedback here. Lost from Pro Wrestling Only says, I will also submit the Rock Triple H ladder match. This is one of those cases where the magic of the moment results in something where the whole is just so much greater than the sum of its parts. That match could easily be nitpicked, but that would be tone deaf, and to me that's like nitpicking Savage Warrior at WrestleMania 7. What's the point? It's a great spectacle, and it's hard to think of 10 more heated matches at MSG. The best part of the crowd reaction is that they were at the very top of the second tier at the time, and they completely dwarfed the crowd reaction to Austin Undertaker, which had months of great hype but couldn't pay it off in the ring. Loopy Date from TPWW says, this is one of those rare moments where Vince's brass ring bullshit seems feasible. Two mid-card guys trying to look like main eventers come out looking like icons. Ian86 from UK Fan Forum says, Triple H Rock is one of my favourite ladder matches, very good list, and you could make a good argument for most of those top matches. Powerful Fox from the UK Fan Forum says, my favourite was the Triple H Rock ladder match. I remember thinking at the time how amazing it was, and I still get drawn in every time I watch it again. Absolutely bloody brilliant. Yes, I still didn't have as much exposure to the inner workings, etc., but I was old enough to form a better opinion of what was in front of me and still have the realization of what wrestling was, which is why this surpasses Bret Perfect and Bret Bulldog in matches of that ilk for me. It always stands out to me as a highlight of the entire Attitude Era, not just SummerSlam, and it solidified two guys as future main eventers. It really was exceptional. And Fraser B from the UK Fan Forum says, I think a case could be made for the top three to be in any order or joint first, as we'll get to. I can't believe you rated Triple H Rock above HBK Razor, which, as we've gotten to, that is, it was not a consensus opinion necessarily, but the drastic disparity in the ranking between those two for you, G, really made the difference in this cumulative rank, because you rate this as your third favourite match, or third best match, in SummerSlam history.
And the reason why I can rate this match without any guilt whatsoever above Shawn and Razor was because this was the first ladder match I ever saw. So everything that you've ever heard from anyone that's talked Rax Lyrical about the WrestleMania 10 match, people around here including, and you're absolutely right in that context, my very first ladder match was Rock Triple H, and I had a similar thing with The Rock, which is why he's my guy. Okay, and you say like it's like trying to like the brass ring with two people trying to look like stars. I remember there was one guy, one prick with a small dick trying to look like a star, and then The Rock came out and was a fucking star. Madison Square Garden plays a huge part in how this match comes across. It just elevates it. When The Rock hits a scoop slam on top and hits the people's elbow, and that's just the greatest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like, and it just kind of coincides with the fact that that was when the Rocky chants from the crowd, from the Madison Square Garden crowd, start to come in. And it's just by the end of it, it's that very kind of similar to a lot of other matches. We'll talk about Bret Bulldog later. Whilst Triple H may have walked out the winner, he wasn't the star. It was Rock, who was world champion later that year.
The work rate is just not on the same level as the other two ladder matches. I'll talk about emotionally as well. I think for me,
Watching it back, I'm really torn between the nostalgic feeling, the memories of it, and I mean the work during probably the body of it is just not on the same level as Shaun and Razor. But god damn it, unlike you, when Rocky slammed troops and slowly postured up and everyone realised what he was going to do and everyone started chanting Rocky, I wasn't thinking he's my guy. I was thinking now everyone else gets it as well. I from a nostalgic point of view, I love it. Rock can do no wrong. He could fucking rape me and I would
I'd say thank you.
Yeah, it wouldn't be rape. So I'm really torn with it, to be honest, because from a work rate point of view, for the majority of the match, I did watch it back a little, not unimpressed, but just it's not Shaun Razor. But I still love it because it's The Rock. And Triple H, just as a baby face, fuck off. Just fuck off. Forgot to mention, though, Mark Henry's snake tongue.
That adds an extra star to the match for me.
I do really enjoy the match, and Rock does come across as an absolute star. I completely agree with the general sentiments around the table regarding Triple H and a baby face. I've just never really felt that at all at any point in his career. And it's the last of what you would call your classic ladder match, in the sense of the drama, well, to me at least, the drama of someone nearly getting there and just missing out. It's that build to the constant nearly getting there.
It's a very slow climbing.
Yeah. As opposed to the ladder may as well have been a yellow Everest that night. But yeah, it absolutely makes Rock a legitimate star. It's just not quite there with the Razor Shaun one. I mean, I think I had them ranked side by side, so I ranked this one very highly.
I would agree overall in terms of the actual content of the match, but the thing is, one of the big things for me in this is the wider relevance that holds back a match like Angle and Ray is apparent in Rock and Triple H, and not just even looking ahead 3 months down the road like you mentioned there, Carl. As soon as that match was finished, you knew these two guys were the future. It wasn't even like a shred of doubt. And as much as we've buried Triple H around the table as a babyface, and he didn't really do it much for me either, he absolutely seemed to have done it for the crowd in MSG that night, because, wow, Jesus Christ, when he pulls that belt down, that place goes fucking ballistic.
Yeah, it's a strange one for me. I felt they weren't super with him until he gets the belt. Maybe it's just my perception, but I've never thought they were super, super into him. I guess it's because the crowd split anyway.
Yeah.
Well, from watching it again last night, I think the first time I really remember like the crowd really popping for him is when he hits the Pedigree.
Henry interfered first by throwing the powder in his eyes, and you got the great scene where he's trying to climb but he can't see fuck all.
Yeah.
And then Rock, who belittled China with that great promo on Raw about how get down on knees where she belongs.
It's a natural position.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, Rock gets the nutshot from China, which evens the odds. He falls down. Triple H is flaying, and he finally gets his hands on it, rips it down. It's fantastically done. In terms of how it felt, and granted, in retrospect, I agree, it doesn't hold up the way Shaun and Razor does, but at the time, it felt far more important than Shaun and Razor 2 did in its own period of time, in my opinion.
And I will say, after, obviously, my love of Shaun and the two ladder matches with Razor, although I love Rock and... I was kind of almost worried that these two couldn't live up and we're going to disappoint, but wasn't disappointed at all. I mean, I love this match still, don't get me wrong.
We have the top five left to go, but before we get to that, we're just going to get to a few more of your notable omissions. Also from SummerSlam 98, which ties in nicely, Heyman from TPWW says, Austin versus Taker from Highway to Hell wasn't the best wrestling match per se, but the hype and build leading up to that match was off the charts. For that reason alone, I think it deserves a mention. Roderick from F4W says, no one gives love to Austin Taker from 98. And Terror Rising from from Wrestling Forum says, no Taker Austin match for the WF title, absurd. Taker was giving Austin a chance to look like a great main event and champion by shooing Kane off. So thoughts on this match, because for me, as Lost said, this one didn't live up to the hype, and it didn't click for me.
Like I said before earlier, in sort of contradiction to one of the emailers there, I didn't really think about the build before a match too much. People can use the concussion as a reason for it not clicking on the night, and that's perfectly understandable, but they're two wrestlers that I felt have never really clicked in the ring.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, actually. Just as a very quick parallel, Kieran, you mentioned earlier on Rock and Brock and the build to that, which gave that big match feel. To me, that does play an effect here, in the sense that you go into the match with a certain expectation. And I think if it surpasses it or if it lives up to it, then, man, it gives you what you want, and you come away with a bigger emotional connection. This one had all the elements of a big emotional connection until the bell rang, and then it just seemed flatter than it should have been.
Yeah, absolutely flat. Just really disappointing. Amazing build. Just really disappointed in the match, to be honest, so I'm not going to say any more than that.
Jimmy Redman from Pro Wrestling Germany says, y'all are sleeping on Cena versus Orton from 2007. That is an awesome match. You remember this? I did mention this one to you, and you gave me that same face you're pulling right now. Just because of the two names, don't let that fool you. I think this is a really good match. I think this is the best Cena-Orton match that they've ever had together, certainly. I think this is great. This was the peak of Orton when he was doing his concussion tour, kicking everybody in the head, and he was a hot heel. They hadn't scorch the earth with the near falls kicking out finishes at this point for the RKO and the FU, and they did it here and it really worked. I think this is a really good match. This is part of the churn, this last 10 years of SummerSlam, where it's very hard for any individual matches to stand out unless they have a big impact. And Cena and Orton, great match standalone as it was, is amongst that wash, and it's very hard to distinguish this from so much else. So I think it holds it out of the top 20 on that basis. Nightro from Wrestling Forum suggests The Undertaker vs. Mankind in the Boiler Room Brawl from 96. It wasn't a match, it was more like an extended backstage brawl, but a really entertaining one. It was intense, dark, you could feel the hatred they had for each other, and they told a fantastic story with a bizarre, shocking twist ending that no one saw coming. It felt like a hardcore match from the Attitude Era, but with a darker tone and no comedy.
I liked it a lot more when I was younger, to be honest, but in recent times I wouldn't say soured on it. But it's one of those where you're sort of waiting a lot. You know how the match is supposed to end. So it's almost like, you know, they're milling around in the boiler room and you're waiting for it to kick in, which is really the chase to the ring. And I think when that happens, that's where sort of the drama element for me picks up. Because until then, Vince isn't great on the call. You don't get the benefit of any hot crowd because, you know, they're watching it on little monitors scattered around the ring at the Gund Arena. Love the ending, though, but that initial bit just means it can't make a top 20 for me.
I just remember there's been dead silence and just being able to hear, like, literally the boiler room.
Apart from Vince occasionally going, oh!
like that, yeah, just remembering to hear, like the fucking tumbleweed.
Well, that's the problem. Weird. When I say Vince isn't good on the call, he almost just completely shuts up and just you get the odd comment or the odd noise.
Big Vic from TPWW suggests Triple H versus Brock Lesnar from 2012. Very underrated, should be on the list. Played up the story of his diverticulitis perfectly. Brock broke his arm, he tapped out. It's fucking great.
Oh, that's a fucking amazing match, yeah.
I think what holds this back is the crowd's not really with it. It hurts it in terms of being a memorable match. When he's doing the sympathetic holding the arm after the match, after having it broken again, he's looking for the sympathy, and the crowd's shouting, "You tapped out."
Yeah.
That, to me, epitomises why this match doesn't work the way it's supposed to. And it's not like it works in a conflicting way that makes it a spectacle. It just doesn't work for its design purpose. So I can't put this top 20.
Yeah, not a fan of the match. It doesn't click. The crowd, as you say, aren't really with it. And I have a bit of an issue with them playing off the diverticulitis because they hadn't played off it with Cena. Apart from a brief mention from Heyman in a promo, they didn't really make a big song and dance about it, but then they decided to just sort of shoehorn it in here, so I don't really give them much credit for that either.
Dominator from TPWW says Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio in 2005. It didn't need the battle for custody of Rey's son stip in it, but it was a fun match nonetheless. Carl, I think if I'm not mistaken, you had done a previous list in years past, and you did put this in your top 20 years ago, so I'm wondering if you've watched this match back and soured on it somewhat, or what changed your mind here?
I was actually hoping that you'd forgotten that I'd done that, and this wouldn't air. Yeah, I'd said to Liam off air that we had both constructed top 25 lists for a show we used to listen to called Sunday Night Submission, but they did some fantastic work.
They did, and the intro to the show every week is an homage to that very show. Fun fact.
Yeah, this made my list, and I'm not really sure why. In all honesty, looking back, the Dominic stuff, I just think, to me, a ladder match, you're going for a belt. And so to go for, you know, briefcase for custody
papers. They should have Daniel Dominic by the first.
You want something much more valuable than a child.
Hey, you can't put the child in the bank.
As much as I like to say I don't factor in a build, when that is the purpose of the match, you can't ignore it. It's there, it's in the back of your mind. There's a few blown spots during the match as well, which I think hurts it. And in particular, the ending. And Liam, from that little chortle, would you like to chime in with the ending there?
Is this when he bangs the mat and he screams, "God damn it! Where the fuck was Mickey?"
That would be the one.
When Vicky misses a cue.
The only thing I remember is that I'm your pappy now.
They made a t-shirt.
Yeah, that's all I remember.
Good action in the match, but again, I see your point here. It does hold it back. Getting to our top five now. At number five, Tables, Ladders and Chairs in 2000. The Hardys, Dudleys and Edge and Christian. I'm very interested to see here. Top five, very good designation, but one person around this table did not put this in his top 10. Kieran, I'm looking at you. I don't know if you want to dive in here and say, at the time, did you rate this higher and this is a retrospective change, or did you just not rate this match that high?
No, I always really liked the match. Came to watch it back last week for this show, and I was really underwhelmed.
Really?
I mean, it's still a really good match, don't get me wrong. It's obviously, where did I rank it?
11.
So, you know, still 11. But I just watched this match, and it's just like straight away, boom, 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 car crash, car crash, car crash. There's no psychology. There's pretty much no structure. It's just dudes setting up shit and jumping through it, which is great and it's spectacular and it's sick as fuck, but these guys are killing themselves. And it's like, just watching it back, I don't know, maybe I'm getting compassionate in my old age, I just didn't rate it as highly as I once did.
I think on the absolute contrast to you in this case, of the matches of this ilk that would follow, the stunt show ladder matches and the TLCs, I think that, contrary to what you just said, I think this is the best laid out match. The crowd here again is through the roof almost from the beginning.
Bully Ray climbing the ladder, looking at the tables where he's going to land rather than looking at the fucking belts. Bullshit.
That deducts points, don't get me wrong. But I just think that it's a spectacular match of this kind as you're ever going to see. This isn't like the Money in the Banks where they're sitting on their hands until a high spot happens. They want the Hardys to win badly. The hometown element does add something to this. And I thought that, you know, the right team won. This was the peak for all three teams, I think. At the same time, it coincided nicely here. The stipulation made sense with it, you know, the way they built it up with, you know, Edge and Christian with the concertos, the ladders and the tables with the Dudleys, obviously. I rate this match very highly. I think this is fantastic.
Unlike Kieran in my old age, I am certainly not getting compassionate. And Kieran is absolutely right. It is a car crash. But it's an entertaining car crash. And isn't that really all that matters? sort of picking up a part of what Liam said there when he referred to Money in the Bank, even with TLC 2 and everything that follows, where because the crowd have seen the first, they're waiting for those spots, so there's that lull from the audience watching, which affects the matches a little bit, I think. Whereas this one, because it's the first, you know, this shock and awe by everything. I'd never seen anything quite like that before. So in a similar vein to sort of the Brock scene, I think the shock draws you into it and immersed me into it, and that's I just think it's thoroughly entertaining. And if I'm not mistaken, I had it ranked bang on fifth, so I can't complain one jot.
As did G.
Yeah, I did as well. I agree.
Oh, Jesus.
I prefer this one a lot more to TLC 2 at WrestleMania 17. I think, and I agree with Liam, I think it's a little bit more kind of well structured, but the action is just so ferocious in it. Commentary just selling everything as just rightfully so, as just so fucking dangerous, and like these guys are putting everything on the line because the tag belts mean everything to them. Yeah, and like obviously the Hardys being super over, but I tell you what, like the Dudleys getting good pops as well. They weren't too far behind in terms of popularity, and just like all the spots are really fun, really kind of well set up. The Bubba Ray, okay, look while you're positioning the ladder, but once you're on the rungs and you're climbing up, stop looking, because what you're going to do if you figure out you're not far enough, well, you're going to go back down the ladder and remove it again.
That fuck had like 9 tables to fall through. Compare it to Matt Hardy taking the back bump
where you couldn't even see where he was going. I was much more impressed with that.
If you overshot that and it's on the barricade, oh my god! Done.
But saying that, whilst I'm annoyed with Bubba, I can understand why he's doing it, because he's obviously looking where he's going. He's kind of worried. I'm probably more annoyed with the director, just thinking like, why didn't you just cut to the wider camera, so to say, and just kind of hide that. But that's just like such little kind of like piss niggles, really.
Maybe it was just my frame of mind when I watched this match, but it's like, How was it 5 minutes into the match and Jeff's climbing a big ass ladder to dive through tables? How is that going to win the match, you fucking moron?
I take more of a and maybe it's more of a liberal stance on the psychology of the match. But the whole design is, there's weapons all over the place. You've got to destroy these guys before you're going to climb, because you've got six guys there. So what are you going to do? Climb the belt with five people below you? You're going to die. Which ended up being the moral of the story, where you've got Matt climbing up thinking he's got it. He goes to the top of the big ladder, and then he fucking dies. Bubba does the same thing. Jeff and Devon are hanging from the cable. First time that was done, which was absolutely breathtaking, and does play a part in my, I think, a fantastic finish.
You watch that bit again, and when the ladder gets taken away, and you can collectively, in the audience, each individual person, you can see the exact same reaction I had when I watched it, which was hands to the mouth, oh gosh, or looking through your fingers, or the gaps in your fingers looking at that, because you're just thinking, that just looks fucking stupid. It's Jeff's idea.
I just love the fact that when Devon lands, his body seems like move completely independently, like his limbs are just all over the place. Moving on to number four here, the first match on this list to get a first place vote. It's SummerSlam 94, Bret Hart versus Owen in a steel cage. Carl, I want to go to you first, because this was your number one pick for the best match in SummerSlam history, and I will accompany your comments with those of the listeners. Hunter Hurst Helmy from F4W says, as always, I feel the need to say that the Hart Brothers cage match is massively overrated, and GN Wrestling also from F4W says the Hart cage match is utter trash, nowhere near a top 20 match.
Oh, I love how with a lot of these, where it goes to the listener feedback, it's echoing nice sentiments about the choice. We get to the one that I've picked number one, and lo and behold, there's not an email that has a single nice thing to say. Well, thank you very much. Look, personally, I love this match. I love the sense of it's about escaping from the cage. There are too many cage matches they did where that doesn't play a part, and it's all about just sort of brawling, just having a standard match, and they don't play on that drama of trying to escape the cage. And this, I thought, did it brilliantly, and the sideshow involved is absolutely brilliant. I don't need to go into too much detail about it, because we've done it on previous podcasts, but the entire Hart family there, Neidhart playing the shit stirrer, the Hart family effectively trying to climb the cage at the end, Neidhart clotheslining Bulldog, and Bulldog dragging his wife over the rail as well. Always got to pop out of me. The crowd are hot for it as well. I mentioned before about matches with Bret and there being stories and storytelling behind it, and you don't have enough of that anymore. And I just think this was a classic example of that with a cage match.
Yeah, I think I had this at number four. I mean, when we get to like my top four, they're so close together. It's just ridiculous. But this is my favourite cage match of all time, which is strange because it has no blood, which is usually a big characteristic of most cage matches. Not a drop in sight. And if you take like the actual things within the match, little stupid things like the classic blue cage, which I just miss, is just fucking awesome. Brett's talking about like remembering when Owen was in his crib and he's just looking down at him. He says that's exactly what's going to be like when you're down in the ring and I'm climbing the cage winning and everything.
I just hope you can live with it.
Yeah, it's only and it's all about escaping the cage. That's the key thing. It wasn't necessarily completely about demolishing each other, leaving each other in a bloody pulp. It was just like Owen just wanted the title. And so he was going to bail. He was going to bail. That was his tactic. And like Bret was just going to stop him. And like at times it would probably, to some people, might seem pantomime every time Owen did the dive towards the door and Bret would just grab the foot in time. But like the more it went on, the crowd just getting more and more into it.
It's just drama.
Because every time he's getting closer and closer and closer, like to the point where the door opens, he jumps and he's almost out, and Bret just grabs his foot at the last minute. He's like almost all of him's out apart from his 2 feet, and he drags him all the way back in. Yeah, we've talked before about Neidhart and just don't point your finger at me, and his little fucking blue and black striped leggings with the shorts and the tennis shoes and butch lesbian bulldog.
I don't know what else to say apart from greatest crotching of all time.
It is marvellous. You did rate this one lower, Kieran, and you rated this at number 9. I can certainly see, because there's a lot of people who do rate this match lower. I think it goes a bit longer than it needs to. In truth, it's a classic match. I'm not going to take much away from it. I think it goes a little bit longer than it needs to. I can certainly see people's grudges in the sense of they expect the cage match to be like Tully and Magnum, where it's a bloody fight to the death. And in that sense, I wouldn't call this my favourite cage match of all time. But I think that it's okay in the sense that Bret frames it that way beforehand. And you talk about how build doesn't matter. I think it does in an aspect like this, where Brett says, he outright says in the interview, I don't hate Owen. I've never hated Owen. I just want to get this match. I want to prove it. I want to beat him, and then that's it. Owen doesn't want to kill his brother. He wants to beat him in the match. He wants to take the belt so that he can lord it over his brother. So he doesn't want to bloody Brett up either. He just wants to get out of the cage and prove that he's better all along. The dynamic works for the scene that they set. This is the only match in SummerSlam history that Dave Meltzer's rated 5 stars, if that wants to tickle anybody's fancy. Ooh. There. So an interesting little factoid. But again, I rated this at number 6. I didn't have this quite so high.
My honest, I've always been... Maybe it's because of the hype, like the Meltzer rating and the hype around the match, hearing about it in advance. I really like it. Yeah, it just made me slightly underwhelmed compared to the hype. That's my honest feeling on it.
Yeah, I think the timing issue is a fair point. That it does probably could probably do with a bit of like maybe 5 minutes cutting out.
So you know, I as well the psychology of like the no blood, non-violent cage match. I always thought Owen should be going after Brett. Should have got juice. Owen should have fucked him up. Yeah, because he's a heel. He goes, yeah, he will do that. He'll do anything it takes to win the title. And
at the end in the post match angle, maybe he bloodies him up then, which just incites the family, and that's an extra reason they're trying
maybe
to
maybe it's
in.
Just me wanting blood in the cage.
No, I understand that, and I understand the emailer's points of degree and your philosophy on it, Liam, about why it was possibly ranked so low in the sense of what people would necessarily want, what would be their typical desires from a cage match, let's say. And I understand the argument about juice completely. With regards specifically to Owen and getting juice on Brett, Owen's always playing the chicken shit heel as opposed to the vicious heel. So, but I understand you saying doing whatever it takes, but it was never really part of Owen's dynamic, was it?
But that's, I think we've talked about this before. That I never felt Owen got to the level the long association with Brett could have got him. And I think it's little things like that. It's that serious element. So he's still going to... He's working the feud within the confines of a beef with his brother rather than elevate him in the overall context of the company. Maybe that's what holds it back for me as well. I don't know.
He just remained his little brother.
Yeah, he never escalated as an individual the way a long association with Brett really should do.
Coming in at number 3, Bret Hart, British Bulldog, 1992, Wembley Stadium. Carl was there, 40th birthday. CM Barber from Wrestling Forum says, Bret Hart and British Bulldog was the greatest SummerSlam match of all time and one of the greatest wrestling matches, period. The build-up, the match, the crown, for me, this is as good as it can get. Grecian from the UK Fan Forum, I definitely have this at number 1. It's my favourite match of all time. Loved it as a kid, still love it now. It has everything I look for in a match. Technical wrestling, storyline, a red-hot crowd, everything. Anybody Thriller from TPWW chimes in and says, I'd say that's a very good list. I would probably rank Bret and Bulldog number 1, but its placement is fine where it is. Not J Tab from Pro Wrestling Only says, my favourite SummerSlam match has always been Bret and Davey Boy from 92. Not only is it a great match, but I think for a lot of people in the UK, it represents the pinnacle of our childhood watching wrestling. I was 10 years old and wrestling was incredibly popular at the time. Everybody in my school was talking about it, and I remember a load of us gathered at my friend's house to watch the show. Davey Boy was so popular in our group, and I don't think they've ever had a British wrestler since that's resonated with so many people over here. Lord of the Drums from F4W says that this match takes number 1 for me. Bret was so freaking good. And CS from Pro Wrestling Only says, serious question. Would anyone know that it was a carry job if Bret Hart hadn't egotistically broadcast that fact everywhere to toot his own horn? No. So I don't see why that knowledge should affect the perceived quality of the match. An interesting point there, because that's actually something you mentioned, G, previously off-air about the way that match is viewed now. It's not like Davey's even here to defend this point. I know, which adds
he
an extra...
He wouldn't have been able to vocalise it well anyway.
As SummerSlam 92 proved in his pre-match promo.
I don't even know you.
Well, this didn't get a single vote for number 1, but it got a lot of second places. Kieran, Carl, you both put this number 2, I put this number 4.
And I will state the after reading Brett's book, the whole kind of knowing the behind the scenes leading up to it has affected my enjoyment of it. I don't know, it's a great match. It really is. There's just a few little niggly things that just takes it away from me, like over other matches, say like Brett Owen. Which I rate as being higher. I kind of know now like how fucked Bulldog was at least the night before or whatever, and he can't remember a thing. Brett's carrying him through it. So
one
I,
of those things in a sense that you can't unsee, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's the thing. And once you know about it, you can't unsee it. And it's just the thing of like I place it in a high regard. I'll admit I was probably a bit harsh with the placing, but I would certainly rate this as a high match, as in a great performance by Brett. If people want to complain and say that it shouldn't be a factor in this, it is. Brett carried Bulldog through a fantastic match, really great finish, and obviously a lot of things that's going to be brought in to why people put this as number two is obviously the Wembley Stadium and just the reaction. I mean, the pop at the end is just fucking huge. Strange they never did another pay-per-view over here.
It's a wonder travesty why. That they never did another pay-per-view over here. I have a little bit of a different take on Brett's remarks. If anything, this might sound bizarre, but I actually reflect on it favourably. It speaks to just how great Bret Hart was, that they were able to construct such a brilliant match with that added obstacle up against him. The fact that that's what was produced, I give him all the credit in the world for it, so I don't necessarily automatically think of it as a negative and let it have a negative effect on my ranking in the match. It's brilliant in-ring. You have that family element too, which plays on the drama. You know, the cut into Diana during the match, you can see her reactions, the ending that's involved with the hug and both men's arms being raised, all adds to the drama, and it gives you a real feel-good factor at the end, and you just can't ignore that spectacle. It's just there's such grandeur involved, and it's, you know, that sort of ultimate sizzle to go along with the stake of the action in the ring, and I just think it's fantastic.
Talking about Shawn Michaels, I don't try to add nostalgia in there, but this one I will happily slap on a nice dose of nostalgia and count it, because you're a young British fan, and I've never been big on the British thing, but goddamn, I love the Bulldog. Brett was amazing. The spectacle was unbelievable.
Lennox Lewis with the flag.
God damn, just
everything about
it. Yeah, and I absolutely love the finish as well. Being that kind of like the flash pin, over the shoulder, sex position. Brilliant finish. Felt at the time elevated Bulldog. Was pissed when he dropped the belt to Sean. Just a spectacular occurrence that was maybe more special to us, as feeling like, yeah, wrestling had actually come to us over in England.
And our guy is succeeding.
Yeah, real national pride about it, which is, you know, something I'd never really say, especially about wrestling. Incredible fond memories, just love the match.
Yeah, and like I said, the action in itself is fantastic. There are people in the feedback who said if you judge this bell to bell without the atmospherics, there are better matches. The arguable point, if you want to take that stance. Personally, I think it's fantastic. I think it's it's easily, in my opinion, the best WWF match in 1992. I think it's one of the most iconic matches in the history of SummerSlam.
Yeah, that's the word. That's the word I think I was struggling for. Iconic.
Yeah, it really is. There are a few matches that when you think SummerSlam come to mind before this one.
That night setting as well, just added I could wax lyrical about it.
Fucking green foam fingers in the crowd.
I was just I think also because when I watched it I was so divided in it, being a Bret Hart fan, but also it's like I love Bret Hart, he's Intercontinental Champion, I love that, but the other guy's British, and it's just that kind of tear. So I don't know, maybe that had an effect a bit similar to the CM Punk Brock, where if I change my mind and I raised my choice up a little bit, that might mean that the match get risen up our list in total, and I think third place is right for this match.
If you think third place is the right place for it, why didn't you rank it third?
Touché.
And after that, we now move along to the sixth Bret Hart nomination on the top 20 list.
It's the SummerSlam.
Absolutely. This is, of course, Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect from 1991. Arrogantly Grateful from Wrestling Forms is one of my favourite matches of all time, so this would be by far the top of my list in regards to the best SummerSlam matches. Mr. Canada from F4W says the only real glitch in the match is Hebner calling for the bell way too quickly. I love how much they get out the hair pulling and headlock stuff to start the match. Perfect's just such a great dick heel in this match too, causing the crowd to break into those Let's Go Brett chants. Loopy Date from TPWW says, I'm probably not the only one who will say something like this, but this was the first match that I ever remember afterwards thinking, wow, that was better than the Hogan match. The 8-year-old Gold Mark and me had his work rate cherry pop that night. Mr. Unall Day from FLW says, Brett and Perfect number one, lock this thread. I was there, crowd went apeshit for Brett and Virgil's wins, more so than Warrior Hogan and Savage. Powerful Fox from the UK fan forum says, technically, the most crisp slash best match I have seen out of all of them is Brett versus Perfect. It was unbelievable. The problem, though, is I was 5 years old at the time, so I never got the chance to really appreciate it with hindsight and more knowledge and appreciation of what was going on. Same with Brett versus Davey. Exceptional match, and I remember it being great, but it wasn't until much later that I could really appreciate it for what it was. And wrapping it up, Crowbro from FLW says, Heart Perfect is my favourite match ever, but the rest of the list looks good. SummerSlam has always been one of my favourite shows. So, G, this was your number one, so yeah, by all means, take the lead.
Going from a bell-to-bell perspective, that this ranks as number one for me. I was just completely 100% into this match, and it's always my favourite. Because it's just the little things, and it's Brett's fantastic in it, but it's just also the level of performance that Perfect does, considering the limitations at the time with his back injury. Just little things like the promo beforehand, classic Perfect promo with a nice little line saying, you know, you're the excellence of execution. You might be excellent, but you're not perfect, and you can't beat Mr. Perfect. And it's just like little lines like that, as stated in the chaps that wrote in, of just the fast paced beginning, the headlock takedowns, and just like Brett's on Perfect straight away. Much to his annoyance, and you can see, and man, we're considering how bad that back was, man, he was taking those headlock takeovers really hard at a real fast pace because he just wanted to have the best match possible, wanted to get Brett over as much as possible, and you know, make himself look pretty good on the way out as well. Just Perfect, just absolutely fantastic. He does all the classic spots. He does the old gets thrown across the ring and gets crotched on the ring post. Brett, he's even doing where Brett's Irish whipping him into the ring post on the outside, and he does the flip bump on the outside, which is just painful, knowing what he must have been feeling at that time, just thinking like he's just going above and beyond the call, and just the action from bell to bell is just fantastic. The thing that really kind of sells it to me, and for a long time I thought it was by accident due to how great Perfect was the whole tearing of the singlet. If you allow me to really kind of like in-depth analysis, is like the symbolism of tearing of the singlet at first. It was that kind of like the first like chink in the armor for him, where it's just like this guy
he no longer looks perfect, is that it?
Or, sorry?
Like he no longer looks perfect.
Yeah, exactly. It's that thing of like this guy just models himself on being perfect, and this is like Brett's on top of him, and immediately he's stripping like part of the singlet away, and it's just like this guy, you know, isn't unbeatable. Brett's got his number, and Perfect's on the back foot, and it's just fantastic. It's just that little bit of detail, and at the very end when he pretty much just strips him of the complete gear, and it's just like, yeah, you're done, you're not perfect anymore, I'm the fucking champ. It's just fantastic storytelling, and it's like even with like the finish where with some people maybe complain that Earl Hebner was a bit premature with the old ringing of the bell, because Brett had barely even stood up by the time that submission hold's been locked on. But like you watch the crowd reactions, and they don't give a shit. They sold it so well, and I actually kind of like the fact that that Perfect tapped out immediately, because it's just that thing of like when you see submission holds now, and they're in the submission hold for like 5 minutes, and they're doing the whole thing, and they crawl towards the rope, and then they get dragged back into the center and all that stuff. It's like, well, this hold's supposed to be painful. You're supposed to not want to be in it, but in this case, Perfect's barely in the hold 5 seconds, or he says he quits. He can't handle it because the move is that fucking strong and that powerful. I just buy into the whole match a whole lot more because of it.
I mean, yeah, it's a great match. For years, I believed that the sharpshooter broke Perfect's back, and that's why he tapped out so quick, or gave up so quick. Brett, I was never a huge fan, but when you watch it back, it's like, Jesus Christ, he's such an amazingly subtle babyface.
Oh, it's brilliant.
And Perfect is just... yeah, considering what the truth was, it's just still a man possessed. Yeah. I would actually prefer he held onto the sharpshooter longer as well, though. Mm. Yeah, just that, let him simmer a little bit and then tap. Yeah, but you know,
at least let him stand
up. But apply it. But, yeah, get it on.
He's actually on his feet.
You know, it broke his back, so it's all good.
Everything is done with such panache. You've got Perfect doing the right thing in helping to cement a new star. A few wrestlers could look themselves in the mirror and know they haven't done that over their careers. And it did have that feel of a sense of a breakthrough for someone. It felt big.
No, this wasn't just a title change that you could just sort of brush off and think, oh, you know, oh well, that's nice. Let you know, moving on. Yeah, you know, we got the $1 million title match coming up next.
It's like the Bulldog Brave. It was an iconic title change.
Yeah, but, you know. It felt like someone grabbing that brass ring. Yeah. But it did have that breakthrough feeling. They've got the crowd absolutely eating out the palm of their hands, and you know, not to try and rag on New Yorkers or anything like that, but it's MSG. We know New York fans can sometimes not go along with things, point in case being The Rock, as we mentioned earlier, but they are absolutely with this, to the point where there is just a standard suplex.
I was going to say the same thing.
The standard suplex, and the crowd go apeshit thinking it for a near fall, and you just think, you can't, as performers, you can't ask for more than that, thinking, yeah, they're on this ride with us. We've got them in the palm of our hands. You know, if you've got it as your number one, absolutely can't argue with it. When we were putting the list together, I instantly knew it was going to be my top five, without settling on a final position. That's how highly I rated it. I didn't need to think about it too long at all. Right, bang, that's going to be in there somewhere. So yeah, I can't argue with the placement or argue with anyone's praise at all. I think it's all perfectly justified.
Completely agree, 100%. Not a single bad thing to say about this match. I've watched this match so many times, and every time there's like a little thing to notice about, Jesus Christ, Brett is just a phenomenon when it comes to just this intellect for how to work the crowd. Again, I mentioned before getting that big reaction for a Russian leg sweep in the first four of a 2 out of 3 4 match with Demolition. You mentioned it there, Carl, the vertical suplex, and then people fucking go crazy like it's the stunner or something like that, you know? And it's just, he just can't get out of the headlocks. Perfect does take over, he does get the advantage. He's taking these sort of, you know, he's wrestling nastily, he's, you know, the chops, the grabbing his face in the corner. Yeah. He kicks out the perfect plex, which is a cool thing, and they put that over huge on commentary. The commentary needs to be mentioned here.
Oh, Piper.
And Monsoon, he did a really good job on this. Brett's on the rally, and he steps through the ropes, he's about to get the sharpshooter on, and perfect kicks the rope into his balls. Perfect has resorted to the low blows, and then he picks his legs up, and he does it again, and the referee catches him, so he does it a third time, a leg drop to the stomach, where he's gesturing to the referee. No, that one was above the waist, but he's getting these low blows in, and then Brett catches him, and he tries to do it again, turns to the sharpshooter, and it's his undoing. Brett cannot be beaten on this night. All around, great stuff.
I'm just glad it gets the recognition, because I think it's the best of the Bret Hart matches.
Absolutely, and it gets ranked accordingly here. But it has become time for number one on the list, and we have come to, of course, Shawn Michaels versus Triple H, SummerSlam 2002. To get to your feedback here, Brock Leslie from F4W says, justice has been served with number one. I remember afterwards watching it, thinking it was the best match I'd ever seen. Damian Ray from TPW says, the emotion behind this match was phenomenal. Michaels showing up as good as he ever was, as if he never left, and having to make an in-ring comeback with some of the finest in-ring storytelling in company history. It is the ultimate comeback match. Brad Brains from F4W says, say what you want about what happened after, but the build-up in the match of HBK and Hunter is some of the best WWE's ever done. Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPW says that this is a great match, as much as I hate to admit it, but I don't know about it being the best. I have to say, if we take ourselves back to that time period, it was shocking to see that Michaels hadn't lost a step. In fact, it seemed like he added more wrinkles to his game since he'd been in the ring last. Wasn't too fond of the angle at the end of it, though. Felt like Michaels should have just been allowed to have his moment. Number one WWF fan from TPW says, this is the easy choice for me. HBK is my favourite of all time, so there is bias, but I generally think there's a standalone match, it's one of the best I've ever seen. Add to that the build and the drama of the comeback, and I don't think anything else comes close. Hardcore Hogan from F4W says, I think this match has aged well. When it happened, people couched the praise in stuff like, and he did all that in his first match back, etc. What Would Kevin Do from TPWW says, easily the best in my opinion, but it's also my favourite wrestling match of all time. Everything about it is perfect. The perfect lead up, the perfect story, and executed flawlessly. Tigerick from the UK fan forum, yes, there is more. I watched this recently, only the second time I've ever seen it. It was really good, but I thought it lost about half the drama, knowing what I know now. The first time I watched, I genuinely feared for Michael's safety, and it's one of the first matches I found easiest to buy into since I was a little kid. I almost watched it through my fingers the first time. I felt sick at the bumps that Shawn was taking, and I genuinely felt overjoyed at how great he was. It loses that watching now. I wish I'd not seen it again. It's funny because when I watch a match I loved as a kid, like the Hearts and Demos, I feel 10 years old again. I get lost in it now just like I did then. That doesn't happen with matches I loved as an adult, even ones as great as this, interestingly enough. And finally, Ryan Strikes Back from F4W says, one of my favourite matches of all time. I think Bret Hart is a little overrated on this list, although Bret and Bulldog and Bret and Perfect do belong near the top. Shawn and Triple H, I think it really depends what age you were or how long you've been watching. If you were just from the Attitude Era, it doesn't mean as much. But if you were watching from 94-95 and had witnessed the whole thing, Shawn's rise to great matches, the injury, hearing about how pilled up and awful he was, hearing about his Jesus moment and then the comeback, the whole package was 5-8 years of history, and in that moment we all genuinely thought this was a one-time deal and that a bad bump could destroy Michaels' back. So for a moment in the pro wrestling circus, I truly believed every backbreaker was agony for Shawn Michaels. Great match. Yeah, a ton of feedback on this one. Obviously, it's the one, so it's the first thing people look at. A lot of positive feedback on this one. There are some people who don't rate this match as highly for whatever reason, but my number one, Kieran, your number one, and as a result, it obviously bumped up the average and takes the top slot here.
I fucking love this match. Probably more... it may be... When I rewatch this match... Maybe I like it more than the ladder match at WrestleMania 10, which I say
really?
Is the I say it's the most that was the most impactful match for me at the time. This match, at the time, the nostalgia element, the personal enjoyment, but now watching it, just this is the perfect pro wrestling story for me. JR is, if anyone can tell me a better JR match than this, well, good luck. If there's any point at all he didn't know he was fucking amazing still, and he did because he was faking the back injury, it's when he's selling, when he starts, like the first backbreaker and the crowd actually shits himself, because like myself and like Liam, we were generally concerned that Shawn was going to fall in half during this match. He takes the first backbreaker, it's like, oh my god, he's still going, oh don't do this Shawn, don't do this Shawn, backbreaker on the chair, it's like, oh, oh my
awesome.
God yeah. It is just amazing storytelling by everyone involved. Even I think Triple H is a tremendous heel.
He is excellent in this match.
Can't underrate him in this.
Yeah, he was brilliant. The Juice, although maybe some people get pissed off by it, I think actually it helped the match from work, because it almost made it more believable that this guy, who the story is that Shawn is so broken down, or at least he was, that the blood is almost the chink in the armor to bring Triple H down a level, to just elevate as Shawn is grown into the match himself. I just think it's an absolutely perfect story. The comeback is just amazing. When Shawn climbs to the top, does the fucking I'm fucking crazy, yeah. And when he looks at the crowd and says I love you, when he drops that elbow, I love you too, Shawn. Thank you very much.
Mop for Kieran.
It is a truly wonderful performance, because as we tend to believe now, that the severity of the back injury over the years was very much overplayed, but even putting that to one side, you are still dealing with someone who has been away from the ring for 4 years, and back injury or no back injury, you could still picture there being some rust there, things potentially not quite clicking, mistakes happening. And you'd be hard pressed to fault someone if that did happen. There is none of that here. It is a clinic, and I've criticised Shawn Michaels on countless occasions, and will probably do so in the future. But on this night, he was perfection. He was absolutely perfection. And we talked about sort of the characteristics of The Rock in one of the matches earlier. His characteristics here, which Kieran's touched upon with the craziness and the I love you, and even kissing Earl Hebner at the end after the quick roll, the flash pin, he does just take you on an emotional journey. I can certainly see why people would put this at number one. It's drama filled. The reference to the blood, I think, is an excellent point, because it does show a vulnerability to Triple H, and this isn't going to be some one-sided affair, and it gives it the sense of this is a fight, this isn't wrestling, this is a fight. So it all plays in. It's an absolute masterpiece.
I just want to quickly say, I forgot to mention it, a couple of things. First of all, Shawn coming out in the jeans, the Terry Funk look, it's brilliant, because it's the unsanctioned street fight, but I think it also kind of subconsciously lowers your expectations.
Absolutely.
And then he just
as
he grows into this match, he just pulls the trigger on it, and it's just an extra element. And in terms of the ending with the sledgehammer, I really liked that as well.
I do too. I think it's brilliant.
I thought it looked great. The first shot, obviously, he goes down, then he does the real big one. It's like, is it the only time Triple H has actually swung the hammer right? like it's a hammer?
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was like, you know, he brought us up, and then it's like, oh, God, you son of a bitch. just perfect.
Again, from start to finish, it's brilliant. You mentioned the expectations thing there. I go into this match, I had like no expectation, and to me, as an enormous Shawn Michaels fan, as you well know and as you are too, Kieran, the fact that it was Shawn Michaels' return didn't really weigh that much on me going, because I was like, well, they're kind of saying it's not really a match in the build-up. I'm just expecting some kind of angle. I don't really know what it's going to be. And yeah, like you mentioned, Shawn coming out in the jeans. It's just like, I don't really know what this is going to be anyway. So it's like, and the video build-up was fantastic, but when it comes to the match, and early on, Shawn's got the advantage until Triple H first gets that first backbreaker that you mentioned before, and then it's just heat, 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 because this is Shawn's obvious weak point. Everybody knows it. It's the most credible heat that you've seen, because there's 4 years of build-up that's already conditioned in all of our minds, even if it's not at the forefront, which it is here. It was in the back of everyone's mind going in anyway. The nip-up, which some people can object to because they think, oh, well, that kind of undoes the back work. I completely disagree. I think that it's the perfect thing to do in that moment, because it tells the thing of, no, he can take it. He can take it, and he can still be Shawn Michaels. He can still do the things he could do before. And he follows that up with, like, big spot, big spot, big spot. When he's standing in the corner for the superkick and everybody's thinking this is the end of the match, my God, what an incredible effort. And then he catches the foot, goes to the pedigree him, and all the air gets sucked out of the room until he pins him, and then he gets him, and everybody just loses their mind. And just when everybody's at the peak, they fuck him. They fuck him again. Triple H leaves with all the heat. Shawn leaves with so much sympathy. And I can't say that it was a bad decision, because, again, the belief was that it was probably a one-time thing anyway. So that was the right thing to do in the long term.
I've only watched this match once, right, which was at the time, and I decided, like, so I could comment on this effectively, because I knew the passion I was going to be told by everyone else. I decided to watch it again, and it is exactly how I'd remembered it. At the time, I still believe that his back is a legitimate injury. You're absolutely great call with the gear, with the jeans on. I was thinking the exact same thing. I wasn't expecting much when he first came out. I was actually slightly disappointed. I thought, oh, he's not wearing the tights. I thought, no, what are we getting? Oh, come on, I've been waiting for this. I popped it for Shawn returning as anyone else, you know. It's just like, but then he does the thing where, like, he jumps onto the ropes and he's just lying across the ropes at Triple H, and he's just thinking, like, oh, maybe there's a little something. For the rest of the match, my head's in my hands watching it, and I'm just absolutely stunned. I put this at number two. It's only because of my passion for Bret Perfect that it goes above this, because they worked the fuck out of me. I bought everything hook, line, and sinker, and I asked for more and a napkin. You know, it was just like it was just superb. And like the all the backbreakers, I was just wincing, but it was the moment when he does the side slam on the chair, and the chair just buckles underneath him. I was just like, I was shouting at the TV, this is absolutely absurd. And as I said, you can't underestimate Triple H's involvement in this. This was one of the best Triple H performances ever. This was him at his most dastardly, at his most sadistic, just to saying, hey, I'm crazy, before he's about to fly through the air, through a table, which was like a great, like, get up out of the chair, jump up and down type of spot, where it's like, oh my God, he's great. I think it's after he hits the elbow drop and he just gets up onto one knee and he just does that thing where he starts shuffling across the ring, and he's just like, he's gritting his teeth, and it's like the fucking, it's like even better than the kip up. It's even better than the kip up, because he's fucking powering up. He's like, I've fucking got this asshole. and he wins. It's like adulation. It's like, oh my God, this is fucking awesome. Is he actually back? Is he fucking back? This is amazing. This was Shawn Michaels. And as he said, it's like, I go, what the fuck was this guy up to during these 4 years? Because he's even fucking better than he was before. Well, yeah, I guess so. Oh, like, this guy's even better than he was before. And it's just like, oh my God. And then just the great finish at the end. Triple H, as he said, hits it perfectly. Doesn't drop like a sack of shit. He just winces and just stays there and then just falls. JR's just selling, you gotta burn in hell for this. You're gonna burn in hell, Triple H, you son of a bitch.
You have no soul.
You have no soul, Triple H, you son of a bitch. And it's just like, and they're just carting Shawn out, and the crowd's just so deflated, because it's like, cunt Triple H has just screwed over the big win. You see, in contrast to the Daniel Bryan, John Cena, this is how you do the screw ending, okay? Because it made you want to see more. You don't do the fucking Orton thing with Bryan. This is how you do it, and it's just fantastic. Triple H gets all the heat in the world, smirking as he's walking off, and you're just thinking, God, I hope Sean's okay.
Yeah, after being worked for like 4 years and 25 minutes into that he's back, might be injured. Yeah. We still believe his back might be injured again.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, oh, he's okay. He's actually
going,
okay.
As he's going down, it's like, oh, yeah. He'll still believe
yeah,
me.
Yeah. The kid popping. It's like, oh, he's fucking firing up. I rank it at number two because it's the only match in like my adult life where I got completely 100% worked.
So on that high note, we hope that you've enjoyed the show, ladies and gentlemen. This has indeed been an odyssey, tracking these matches. If we didn't get to your feedback or your nominations, we apologise. We've had so much to discuss. We will be back next week to review this upcoming weekend show. It'll actually be the current weekend by the time you listen to this. The NXT show in Brooklyn and, of course, this year's incarnation of SummerSlam. And we're going to want your feedback to this. We're probably not going to post on the forums to ask for it. So if you want to send your SummerSlam and NXT thoughts along for us to read on the show, send them to scgradio@hotmail.com and we will get to them next week, but I anticipate that's going to be a very interesting show to talk about the current lay of the land. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you for contributing. For G. John Chase,
you might be excellent, but you're not perfect.
For Kieran O'Rourke,
and the folks at Wrestling Profit,
and for Carl Jones,
I'll never understand why women like making this so much.
I am Liam O'Rourke and we are out of here.
I've got nothing left to prove. Your threats I find absurd. I am your hell. Every time you think that I'm done, I'll come back stronger. Every time you think that you've got me, you, and I will put you in the ground.